knowledge fight.
And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy and Pansy. Stop it. Andy and Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work. Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed, we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Love it.
Do you have a favorite gospel song?
Gospel song?
Gospel. Like, do you remember? Did you go to a
Onward
church
Christian
with, like...
Christian soldiers?
No, not a hymn.
Marching
not a hymn. No,
war.
None of that noise.
Okay.
Like, did you ever go to a church
Our
with a
God
full-on
is
gospel
an awesome
choir?
God, he reigns
is that one
from
a gospel
heaven
song?
Above with...
Is that just a shitty song, though?
Yeah, that's the one that sticks out in my head. Yeah. Of, like, we sang that every single week.
Oh, really?
Like, sometimes there would be alternations.
No.
Of, like, the hymns that yeah. we'd sing. But that one was, like, every... That was a mainstay at Woodcrest Chapel in Columbia, Missouri.
right.
That one was big. I don't know, man. I don't know about gospel songs, but like when you bring that up, it makes me think of like the Christian music that I used to listen to mm-hmm. back when I was.
Did you used to listen to like full on Christian? Oh,
loved
like
it.
Like what?
Like DC Talk was.
Oh,
big.
DC Talk was
but
huge.
But I didn't like them that much.
Yeah,
I was
yeah,
much
yeah.
more into the Christian ska.
Okay.
So like the
okay.
Five Iron Frenzy.
Okay.
Was pretty big. The OC Supertones.
Oh, did not know that they were Christian.
Insiders with a Z.
Insiders.
Yeah, they
okay.
were a little bit more like they had a little more swing to them. But there was a little bit of a swing slash
right.
ska.
Right.
Into the insiders.
I gotcha.
But yeah, I was big into them. I went and saw Five Iron Frenzy and Supertones together.
Okay.
Went to a big concert.
Yeah.
It was pretty lame.
Yeah, well, yeah.
My
yeah.
first two concerts.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Spoiler alert. My
yeah.
first two concerts that I went to live. Five Iron Frenzy and the OC Supertones, two Christian ska bands.
Oof.
Next one, Wu-Tang Clan. A little bit of time
that's
in between
that's
those.
A little bit of wide breadth of,
yeah.
yeah. I like a man with a large number of experiences.
Sure. I went back.
How
and,
about like Switchfoot? Did you ever listen to that?
I don't think
that
so.
Nonsense?
Probably.
Or is
probably
that Lightfoot
did.
Or no? Not
Switchfoot
Gordon
sounds
Lightfoot.
Right.
Switchfoot
no.
sounds
you
right.
He had the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I listened to too much of the rock, the Christian rock stuff. Although I undoubtedly did. Like, I'm sure I did, but it just doesn't stick out in my memory.
Yeah.
Those, like, really weird niche Christian music ones and
yeah.
things that, like, really stick out. Like, I was actually into the Christian ska, and I've gone back and listened to some of it, and some of it holds up.
Still bangs?
Some of
it,
I don't
sure.
know if it bangs, but some of it is still pretty good. It's
okay.
listenable,
right.
at least.
Okay.
I know everyone out there is rolling their damn eyes at me, but I think some of it is still, like, there's a couple Five Iron Frenzy songs that I think hold up, even if you, like, that you can listen to them almost outside of it
right.
being religious.
Right. Well,
now,
here's the luxury of ska is that people are going to roll their eyes at you if you even say ska is listenable. So you don't even need to worry about the Christian part.
That is a fair point.
Yeah.
The other ones that stick out to me are there was a Christian reggae group that
nope,
had an
that's
album
a, that's against the
called
law.
Christafari.
That's against the law. There is a law against that.
Christafari. Terrible. Terrible. Terrible stuff. There was the other, there was a rapper named T-Bone.
Okay.
That I remember.
Okay.
Oh, God. Bad times.
He'll bite into the devil like a T-Bone.
It was bad times.
Oh, man.
Listen to a lot of that. So, no, I don't know. I don't remember any particular gospel songs,
right,
but
right,
a
right.
lot.
Ooh.
A lot of Christian music I
yeah.
used to listen to.
Christian
oh.
music for white people was rough.
Yeah. yeah. Except for the ska.
Except for the ska.
Anyway, I know a lot about Christian ska and Alex Jones.
And I don't know anything about either.
And that's what our show is about today. I'm going to tell you all. I'm going to go track by track through my evil plan to save the world.
yeah.
The OC Super. No,
natural.
That was Five Iron Frenzy album. God damn. Anyway, Jordan, today we are back in the past,
yes.
2013, continuing our investigation of Alex Jones's behavior after the tragedy at Sandy Hook. And in particular, we are now locked in the middle of the events of the unfolding of the aftermath of the, I'm going to try and stretch this out.
Yeah, I can see that.
The Boston bombing. We're in the aftermath of the Boston bombing. Today, we're going over April 19th, 2013.
All right.
Which is the day that everything happens.
Uh-huh. Everybody figures it out. They catch the guys. They do the whole, or no, this is the manhunt.
As we discussed on our last episode, which was April 18th, that was the day that the FBI released the images of the suspect. So we now know as Tamerlan and Zhohar Zarnev. So that was on the 18th, and then overnight shit just blows up.
Yeah.
And then the 19th is completely, it's absolute chaos. Yeah, not absolute chaos really, but it's when the city is, everyone is, there's a shelter in place request. Yeah. People are staying indoors. There's the manhunt going on. So that's the day that we're covering today.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the weirder episodes of Alex's show that I've heard in a very long time.
That was one of the weirder days.
Right.
So, you know, that's expected.
But here's what I want to say.
Yeah.
Weird can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
This was an unexpected episode.
Okay. All right.
Alex never quite gives you exactly what you think you're going to find, and we will see.
So I'm assuming an apology and a retraction.
No.
That's not in there?
No. That's outside the realm of possibility.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But we'll get into this here in a moment. But before we do, Jordan, we got to take a moment to say thank you to some people who have signed up and are supporting the show.
I love those people.
Yeah. So first of all, Jacob, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Jacob.
Next, Amber, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Amber.
Thank you, Amber. Next, Alicia. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Alicia.
Next.
Silly Goose.
Ooh, what?
Maria Bamford. Alicia Keys.
Thought this was a reference to the Untitled Goose Game.
No, not yet.
I heard you loved that review of it in The Atlantic.
It was a popular one. Everybody was overjoyed to read that.
Now, next, Javelina or Javelina. I'm not entirely sure, but whichever is correct. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Javelina or Javelina.
Next, Annika. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much, Annika. And then finally, I'd like to say thank you to some people who donated on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, Old Man Coyote, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. Steven, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Jimmy, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Old Man Coyote, Steven, and Jimmy.
Yes, and regretfully we inform you that Old Man Coyote has eaten Steven and Jimmy. They were in the city.
Old Man Coyote a house phone, though.
That's true.
It's all going to work out.
It's all good.
If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I enjoy this show, I like what these gents do, and you want to support our show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
It'd be lovely.
So we jump in, Jordan, and we find out. I know that recently Alex has been saying a lot of things are unprecedented.
Sure. Is anything unprecedented today?
Ladies and gentlemen, what we are seeing right now is just unprecedented. Here in the United States, again, my friends, it is Friday, April 19th.
So, unprecedented.
Unprecedented in the United States? The United States that had 9/11?
Everything is unprecedented.
the United States that is very precedented in this exact circumstance.
It's an interesting thing, too, because like, even if he's talking about the city of Boston being on lockdown, like that's not even unprecedented.
No, that's not unprecedented.
Like, months prior, Governor Deval Patrick called for everyone to stay inside because of a winter storm.
Yeah.
It said that people who were caught driving on the streets could be arrested or fined. So, like, this is not I didn't hear Alex talk
not
about
even
that.
In a different year.
Yeah. So, nothing's unprecedented. Right. Everything is quite precedented.
Yes, very much so.
So, on our last episode covering this coverage that Alex has of the Boston bombing, we heard him utterly convinced that the pictures he'd found on 4chan had cracked this case wide open. And that the media and the globalists were in a mad scramble to keep their false flag operation together. His certainty was, naturally, based on nothing other than his own imagination, but the effect was clear. He was blowing up in popularity, and he loved it. His ratings were through the roof, traffic was coming into the website like crazy. He'd send his reporter Dan Badondi out to disrupt Boston officials' press conferences, and he was successfully able to yell about false flags and say Infowars.com at multiple internationally televised events, including the one on the 18th, where the FBI released the photographs of the two suspects, who were still at that point unidentified. While Badondi's yelling had the effect that it was going for, which was driving tons of traffic to Alex's site, that press conference had another important effect that was ultimately far more relevant to the real world. April 18th was the day that everything broke wide open. For days since the bombing, the perpetrators had every reason to think that they'd gotten away with the attack. They'd returned to their normal lives, and if I were them and I'd just seen the internet, I'd probably think I was in the clear too. That changed at 5:20 p.m. on the 18th when the FBI released their photos. The illusion of safety was gone, and they knew it was only a matter of time before someone called a tip line and said they recognized them, and then the jig was up. And thus began 24 hours of complete chaos. At 10:31 p.m., MIT police officer Sean Collier is murdered sitting in his car, which investigators determined was an attempt to, on these guys to get another gun. This murder happened very close to an armed robbery that happened at a convenience store. So early reports got the two of them mixed up and people thought they were connected, but they weren't. That was another thing that is sort of part of the conspiracy canon, but man, Alex doesn't even actually...
Such a ridiculous coincidence, too.
Yeah, but it kind of makes sense. I mean, no, you're in a metropolitan area. Right, there is going to be another unrelated crime.
No, of course.
Yeah.
But it's like there's, you know, have you ever picked up the phone and somebody was on the other line?
Yeah.
It's so weird and disconcerting, but there's a billion people making a phone call at any given point in time. Somebody has to do it.
Yeah, know? Yeah, for sure.
It's possible, and it happens.
You ascribe significance to it where there may not be
a
significance.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. Though they didn't steal anything from that convenience store, the bombers did hijack a guy's SUV less than an hour later at 11:20 p.m., holding the driver hostage with them. They would go to a gas station where the younger bomber is caught on security cameras shopping for a bunch of snacks. He would later tell detectives that their plan was to drive to New York and set off another bomb there. This plan would be derailed by the SUV's owner escaping the car and running to a different nearby convenience store where he would call the police. You can easily find security camera footage of the driver running into that store terrified, hiding behind the counter and calling the police, telling them that he'd been carjacked by men claiming to be the bombers and that his car had a GPS system that they could track. You can also easily find footage from the same time of the older bomber coming into the gas station to tell the younger brother that the driver had escaped and it was time to go.
Yeah.
The younger guy drops all his snacks and they run out back to the car to leave. Later in this episode, Alex and a caller will discuss how the bombers were in a Mercedes and how that's really suspicious. Like, they're trying to speculate about how did they get this money.
Yeah.
They were driving a Mercedes because they stole it.
They stole it
from this guy. It was this SUV that they stole.
So what's the one lesson we can learn from the Boston bombing? It's steal an older car.
Sure.
I think that might
be. I don't know if that's the lesson.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
The police track that SUV to an address in Watertown, and units are dispatched. The first responding officer spots the vehicle, but is told not to engage until his supervisor arrives. He follows the SUV, then around 12:41 a.m., the driver of the SUV gets out, approaches his car, and starts shooting. The shootout lasts approximately 8 minutes, with both sides exchanging gunfire and one of the bombers throwing IEDs at the police, which Alex will later misidentify as grenades. They were throwing grenades.
Yeah.
He does that in order to say, like, how would they get their hands on grenades? Those are super hard to get.
Right.
They didn't. They made IEDs.
Yeah.
Which is well within the range of their proven capabilities.
Yeah. It's like their thing, honestly.
At 12:49 a.m., the older brother is tackled by police after he appears to have run out of bullets. The officers attempted to get him subdued and in custody, but while they were getting him handcuffed, the other bomber drives right at them. The officers manage to jump out of the way, but the older bomber is run over as his partner escapes. So just before 1 a.m., the shootout in Watertown had come to an end. The older bomber is taken to the hospital, where he's pronounced dead. They run his fingerprints and learn that his name is Tamerlan Tsarnev, and with this information, they're able to identify his partner, his younger brother, Zohar. Neutralizing one suspect is probably a good thing, all things considered, but it would be hard to consider this night's events a good result. One officer had been severely injured, and another had sustained injuries that would end up killing him approximately a year later. Though one suspect was down, police were unsuccessful in giving chase to Zohar, who disappeared into the night on foot after abandoning his vehicle about half a mile from the site of the shootout. Police went to work immediately, attempting to establish a perimeter. All points bulletins were sent out and bomb squads were called in to neutralize the unexploded IEDs that the brothers had left at the scene in Watertown. News of the flare-up broke real quick. And almost immediately, the Watertown Police Department is inundated with tons of reports of suspicious individuals, all of whom they look into and find unrelated to the search for Zohar. In this 24-hour span, the department receives over 500 calls to 911, as opposed to their normal daily average of 30. These people were dealing with an overwhelming situation where a community that had been on edge for days was now looking to them to protect them from a rogue individual on the loose. And it's easy to look at the situation and say that this was just one young man on the loose. What's the need for such a panic? Why do you need such a massive police response, as we're going to end up seeing? And I can see why someone would have that knee-jerk reaction, but the reality is not so simple. At the time, it was very unclear if this was just one kid on his own that they were after. For one thing, this was a kid who had bombed the Boston Marathon, who had been involved in the murder of a police officer, and when confronted by additional cops, he responded by throwing IEDs at them. This is a person who...
And he killed his brother.
Well, yeah, maybe not intentionally, but...
Not intentionally, but yeah, he did. He just did. Which is like a, you know...
From my understanding, it's kind of up in the air about whether or not he would have died anyway. He'd been... Chamberlain had been shot a bunch of times.
For sure.
Yeah, but whatever the case, like, you don't know what this dude is capable of.
Exactly.
It could be one guy on the loose, but that guy could have a cache of bombs. And every minute that he's on the loose, that could be the minute that a hospital or a T station is blown up.
Yeah, or he could be, you know, if you see a big thing like the Boston bombing, there's no way that you're going to think, oh, it's just two lone people. There has to be some sort of connection to some sort of network. How did they get all this information? All that shit. You can't rule that out until you have any information on it.
No, and it was a bit up in the air at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Still, and you can't let him, if he has accomplices, you cannot allow him to regroup.
Absolutely not.
You can't let this person get back to whatever cell, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
if there was one, which we know now there wasn't, but that's not the point. You didn't know that then.
The risk that could come from that is intense. And if you're able to catch the person before they're able to regroup, there's a possibility of disrupting the larger cell, if there is one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why you would need to treat this as if it's a possible worst-case scenario.
Absolutely.
Because the worst-case scenario is terrible.
Yeah.
So at 1:57 a.m., the Watertown PD sends out an emergency message to the residents of the town, asking them to stay inside their homes and report anything that might be helpful in their manhunt. This obviously is a very scary development, but honestly, given the circumstances, I'm not sure there was a good option. And an important distinction needs to be made. At this point, the message to stay indoors was not a mandatory order, and it was very localized to the area directly surrounding the morning's shootout. People could go outside if they wanted to, but they also ran a very high likelihood of a neighbor seeing them and they're wandering around at 2 a.m. What are they doing out there?
That's
suspicious to a neighbor.
911, 500.
This happened to at least one person mentioned in the police report who was questioned and released. So it's not like the police had a standing order that you'd be shot if you went outside, which is kind of what Alex would like you to think.
Right. They set up turrets around every checkpoint and their sniper people walking down the street.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
By 2:30 a.m., a unified command center is set up outside Arsenal Mall, an outlet shopping center in Watertown. The center serves as a hub for coordination between Watertown PD, neighboring area police departments who have come in to help, as well as the FBI and the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency. Over 1,000 individual law enforcement officers are on hand to deal with the crisis, and by the end of the day, more than 2,500 officers will have been involved in some capacity in the situation. At 4:15 a.m., the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency and Governor Deval Patrick authorized the Massachusetts National Guard to deploy armed military police into Watertown. This is another important distinction here, because the authorization didn't come from FEMA or the federal government. This was a state-level decision, which really punches holes in any kind of states' rights, anti-government angle to this response, because that's well within the governor's mandate. Right. They can call out National Guard for emergency situations.
Right. If this had happened in Texas, the Texas governor could also have not called in the National Guard. It is
and
up to them.
More likely not would not have.
Exactly. they would have been out there with a fucking group of vigilantes.
Right. The discussion of whether or not it's the right decision or the most efficient decision is not really my interest.
Yeah.
The point is it was a state decision, which all the arguments about this being the federal government coming in, it's absolutely not true. As the morning comes, 120 military police officers are sent out to assist local authorities in house-to-house searches, which have been authorized, again, by the proper channels. At 5:15 a.m., the governor of Massachusetts and the mayor of Boston have a conference call with the Unified Command Center and decide they need to suspend mass transit services temporarily and put out a shelter-in-place request, effectively putting the area into lockdown. This is the closest thing to martial law as we've seen in the United States for a long time. And it would be easy to see this as the fulfillment of Alex's prophecies, you know?
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No.
This was a very severe but probably necessary law enforcement action. Because what if Johar had been part of a larger cell? Or what if he wasn't, but him being on the loose led to him bombing a train the next morning?
Yeah.
The worst case scenario of not doing whatever needed to be done to catch him that night would be an unacceptable risk to take. And it would have been negligent of the police to not do this how they did.
Right.
Or at least that's my position on it. And it seems like the residents of Boston agree. WBUR did a survey a year later, in April 2014, and found that 83% of respondents believed that the police putting out a shelter-in-place request was the right decision. With that support is crazy high.
Yeah, yeah, that's ridiculous. In the United States, you would have expected 50% to be like, why didn't we all get bombed?
Right.
Fine, whatever.
And that number crossed party lines,
which is
crazy interesting.
Right.
So it seems like the people who are most affected by this agree that it was police acted appropriately.
Yeah, I can see an argument against it. I can understand that conversation, but it can only be had in hindsight. And so we can apply some of those lessons to maybe future circumstances. But I think no one involved acted in bad faith in any way.
No.
Which is why probably so many people agree that it was a good idea, because everybody was really trying to do good.
Yeah, and there were a lot of...
Which is rare.
Right. And if you
especially from the cops.
If you read the after-action report that the authorities collaborated on and put out, there is a lot of very valid criticism, particularly about weapon discipline. It's particularly in the case of the Watertown shootout when they were trying to stop Johar's car leaving, trying to shoot out the wheels or whatever. They ended up creating a lot of crossfire possibilities.
Right.
There are circumstances like that that the police definitely didn't operate how they should have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they weren't doing it because they were trying to fuck around.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, and
it's more an instance of we need better training.
Yes.
So they know not to create possible risk situations.
Right.
Like
right. I want them to learn from this. I don't want to get into this you guys are evil for this specific circumstance. There are so many other ones.
Yeah.
You know?
So like I mentioned, 911 operators got a ton of tips during this time. And one of the more relevant ones had to do with a suspicious person carrying a package who got into a taxi. The police end up finding out that this taxi driver is on the terrorist watch list, and this immediately becomes a huge deal. The taxi was en route to the South Station, which is a hub for both the Massachusetts Mass Transit and Amtrak. So taxi service is suspended in the city by 9 a.m.
Right.
Or it's suspended earlier, but by 9 a.m., it's determined that the taxi driver in question, they'd misspelled his name, and it wasn't the person on the terrorist watch
list. All right, I hate everyone. Of course.
This will not be the only time in this story that appropriate data entry skills would have saved people a lot of time, which leads me to my next point, which is that data entry workers need to be respected and paid better.
I agree, and also should probably have more cultural training about how to spell different names.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
The day goes on, and the police keep coming up empty. And that's where things stand as Alex gets on air. The previous night had been a completely chaotic nightmare, with a murder of a police officer, a shootout in a residential neighborhood, and the request for a metropolitan area to stay indoors while police and National Guard carry out their search.
Yeah.
It's almost like a ball being set up on a tee for Alex.
Yeah.
He's spent his entire career talking about how fake terrorist attacks are being used to bring in martial law, and now he's determined that a terrorist attack was a false flag, and the response has been to enact something that he would call martial law. Though it's not even close to the actual thing
if you get down to
all the details.
Of course.
If there ever was a day when it felt like Alex would be going buck wild, it should be this. He's literally on air while the manhunt is going on, while Boston is in a shelter-in-place request. So let's see how it goes.
So the way you set that up, I assume we're going to get not that and some weird-ass shit instead.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Oh, you're so clever.
Here's Alex getting into some of the stories.
Okay.
I just talked to our reporter, Dan Badondi, that is at Lexington Green. We're Oath Keepers. We're trying to get through to Stuart Rhodes right now. We're Oath Keepers. Go ahead and get Dan Badondi on if we can't get a hold of Stuart Rhodes. Where they're being told the police have revoked the permit for them to have a oath-taking ceremony to defend the Bill of Rights and Constitution, because that is the enemy now that the occupiers hate. And of course, they revoked their permit to demonstrate, but the anti-gun group that got their permit revoked, they are allowed to take Lexington Green and make all sorts of redcoat, Bloombergian, announcements. That's happening while Boston and surrounding cities in Massachusetts into Connecticut have martial law declared.
So he's bringing up the martial law, so that's good. Although he's not really getting into it so much. It's kind of just window dressing to talk about the Oath Keepers not being able to have their rally.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And he's talking about this like they don't have a permit, but these counter-protesters are fine. And by definition, counter-protesters don't need permits. That's part of the whole right of free assembly thing that's in the Constitution Alex loves so much.
I don't know if they like that Constitution anymore.
When a group plans to use public space to hold a rally or a protest, they do need to apply for a permit because they're the ones who wish to use the public space for their own purposes. If the counter-demonstrators wanted to hold a competing rally of their own in a park near Lexington Green, for example, then they would need a permit for that. This was the case with the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where counter groups planned to hold a rally for, quote, racial justice, harmony, and the end of white supremacy at Justice and McGuffey Parks, which are near the park where the right-wing groups planned their rally.
Right.
And they needed a permit, which they had.
Sure.
This is just simple civics. The people counter-demonstrating the Oath Keepers don't need permits because their event is really just a natural extension of the Oath Keepers event, not an event in its own right.
I just heard a million right-wing people scream in terror whenever you said this is simple civics. They don't like it. It's hard to understand,
Dan. Yeah, this is not an example of favoritism or anything like that. It's just how permitting works.
Right.
So, it's nonsense, but it seems to be one of the things Alex is mostly focused on. Also, I'm not sure if Alex has ever consulted a map before, but Boston is not close to Connecticut.
I just heard a million conservatives scream out when you said map.
Uh-huh. Boston is a coastal city on the Atlantic. And if you were to say which other state is closest to it, you'd probably go with New Hampshire or Rhode Island. Connecticut is really close to Springfield, Massachusetts. But for Alex to claim that this martial law is extending into Connecticut, he's really just saying something absurd. He might as well just say that all of New England is under lockdown, which I imagine he would love to try and imply.
Nobody can lock down Maine, and so they will never be locked down. Uh-huh. So you can't say all of New England.
You can get all of it, but...
But Maine.
Yeah. The reason that Alex thinks this extends to Connecticut is because he doesn't understand, nor does he care to understand, the things that he reads. At 7:15 a.m., the police received that tip about the person with a suspicious package in the taxi. You know that one?
Yes,
They were
with
going,
spelling.
They were going to South Station, which includes, like I said, the Mass Transit and Amtrak service.
Right. If you allowed a bomb to get there, you're essentially ending fucking transportation and costing billions upon billions of dollars.
So, right. And part of their investigation was that they had a train that they believed that this person got onto on the South Station.
Right.
So they tracked that train to Norwalk, Connecticut, which was the next stop that they were able to stop the train at and search it. So they stopped this train in Norwalk, and the Metro Police and Norwalk Police Department searched it. There's no extension of checkpoints or martial law to Connecticut. It was just this stop where the police were able to intercept the train that they had a tip that the person might have been on. It was all resolved by 9 a.m., and Alex has no reason to take that kernel of information and use it to pretend that this shelter-in-place request the police put out extended past the Boston suburbs.
It's a real unfortunate situation because they really had an opportunity to have a fight on top of a moving train, and it just turned out it wasn't the guy. So
I like that you think that's an opportunity.
You never get to have a fight on a train.
I don't know if I
not mean, outside of movies do you ever get a good fight on a moving train.
Yeah, there's a reason why.
Yeah, probably.
So Alex has been saying that this is a false flag
pretty
consistently throughout all of his coverage.
Sure.
He's sort of waffling a tiny bit.
Right.
But also in a way that's still demonstrating that he thinks it's certainly a false flag.
Sure.
It's weird.
Okay.
There's a hedging going on.
All right.
But it's almost a meaningless hedging.
All right.
And I mean, there is a 1% chance, maybe a 3% chance, maybe even a 5% chance that they're real organic Muslim terrorists who kind of pick up on the hype of all of this war on terror and go out and basically copycat. So that is a factor. This could be a real terror attack, as I've said from day one. It's a very low probability. But then why do you have the big drill with guys with backpacks everywhere right around where it happened staring? And then you had another patsy they said they arrested, and it was going to be the redneck. And then they had to abandon that and go with plan B.
And you've got meeting with the Saudi ambassador, the foreign minister, and oh, and I thought it was the right wingers, the media said.
So he's saying there's a 1 to 3 to 5% chance that this was real, which is a strange swing. But the all the stuff that he's saying that, but then why blank,
right,
is all just in his head.
Right.
That's all just imaginary stuff.
Yeah.
So like all of the reasons that you have for that 95% certainty that it's a false flag
right.
is just imagined.
Yeah. Look, it's a 1%, maybe 5% chance, but why are all the bees still inside my eyes then, huh?
Uh-huh. So it's weird. It's weird to hear this sort of this thing. Like, why would he unprompted add a greater possibility that it's a real event?
I don't know. To the two, like, it just got five times more likely that it's a real
500%
event.
500%.
In 1 second.
Yeah.
That's fast.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand why. I mean, it's still meaningless. He's still saying it's a false flag, but it's very weird.
Functionally, does he see a difference between there being a 1% and a 5% chance?
No.
Of course not.
No. Anyway, he gets on to talking about how he's been right this whole time covering this this event.
If you go back to Monday afternoon when I went into overdrive on air to break down what I thought was going to end up happening at the Boston Marathon, you'll find that, as usual, we were on target with the spectrum of analysis, because I've seen this over and over again. I said, if there was a drill and if there's a bunch of federal agents around where the bombing happens...
He goes on from there and just trails off.
Right,
he goes on to another thought. We know, because we listened to the episode from that Monday, that Alex was not right on target when he was in overdrive.
Hmm.
It was mostly him just yelling with Richard Belzer about how he thinks this was a false flag and trying to find any little piece of information to justify that belief. One of his interns told him it was Patriots Day, so he ran with that. Rob Dew said his brother left the marathon from dehydration, so Alex ran with and embellished that. He was not right on target. He was constructing a narrative, and he was doing it very sloppily. In that clip we just heard, Alex says, quote, if there was a drill, if there were military all around, and then he trails off and goes off to another topic without laying out what the then part is of this if-then statement. But we know what it is. It's implied.
Then it's a false flag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And every single person listening to Alex's show knows that without Alex saying it. It's an axiom of InfoWars.
Yeah.
And this is where deception is kind of built. Because Alex knows that his audience has internalized this if-then relationship. He knows that a shortcut to proving that something was a false flag, proving in heavy quotes, all he has to do is just create the perception there was a drill going on at the same time. Understanding this dynamic goes a long way toward understanding why Alex is so prone to accept complete bullshit when it helps him get where he needs to go. He has absolutely no ability to prove that the bombing was a false flag. It's just not possible. But his audience has accepted the implied relationship between a drill and a false flag, so all he has to do is prove that there was a drill, which I would argue he still has failed to do. This kind of puts into context why he accepts all this completely flimsy evidence of a drill and then extrapolates that stuff out far past what's reasonable to. He's done this with a school safety drill in a completely different city to assert that Sandy Hook was a false flag. He's done this with a corporate training lecture he's pretending was a drill to assert that the 7/7 bombing in London was a false flag. He does this all the time because he knows that the appearance of a drill is enough to convince most of his audience. It's a shortcut. That's all this is.
Yeah, I'm guessing that after his long career in the TV industry, Bells is a little bit annoyed that he didn't get a story credit on the whole false flag theory there, because I'm telling you, he collaborated, man. He got some good ideas in there.
I don't know. I think he was more the guy in the writer's room who's like, that's good.
He still gets the story credit.
Fine. he gets a with assistance by executive assistant executive producer credit
best. I'll take it.
Sure. So Alex he's convinced still, no matter what, that they were planning on blaming right-wingers, which he expresses in this next clip.
Ladies and gentlemen, they were going to go with the right-wing Tea Party. Axelrod on Tuesday night said, it's going to be right-wing, it's lone wolf, it's one guy.
Hmm.
That's on record. We're going to play those clips later, in case you missed them.
He doesn't.
Then they had all the Democratic operatives on Wednesday come out on MSNBC, CNN, you name it, and they said, ladies and gentlemen, it is the
right wingers. We're not Liberty Six exactly yet, but yes, it's a right wing, probably a soldier. I watched CNN and MSNBC last night before I went on air live on the nightly news at 7, and I saw CNN with three different hosts and guests all say it's going to be a veteran, it's going to be a Navy SEAL. Now, do you understand that? Where'd you hear Navy SEAL first? You heard it here.
And nowhere.
You heard it here. You heard it here.
Nowhere else.
You heard it here.
Because it's not real.
Yeah, Alex doesn't play any of these clips.
He doesn't?
No.
But they would all prove what he was saying.
Yeah, he doesn't. I'm not saying that people didn't speculate stuff on TV news programs.
Sure.
You know, the filling the 24-hour cycle is tough, and a lot of people say a lot of...
dumb shit.
Right.
Yeah.
So someone...
On the reg, if you will.
Someone on MSNBC, someone on CNN saying, is it possible
May
that
have.
This... Entirely possible.
Absolutely.
Alex doesn't play any of those clips.
None.
So, whatever.
This is such an example of why there's no point in engaging with this at all. Because it's like, oh, they didn't say that it was going to be a right winger. Yeah, but they were going to, so they might as well have. Fucking fine.
Right. You know who
whatever.
You know who else said all this stuff? George Norrie.
Yeah,
when you were
exactly.
on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, so. Fuck off.
Alex is also pretty worried that Facebook is getting censorious, and it turns out that this is a
weirdly prescient.
This is a consistent concern of his. So in 2013 and 2018, 2019, Alex is there just trying to get right wing people off Facebook,
absolutely,
and what have you. It's much more specific in 2013.
We're being censored all over the place. Officially. This is pouring in, and we've tried to post our articles on Facebook, and they're being blocked. People are getting errors posting our stuff to Facebook. You cannot publish this link because it contains a dangerous link. They're not saying we're dangerous. Users tried to publish our article, Navy SEAL spotted at Boston Marathon. We're getting all the screenshots of this, wearing suspicious backpacks.
So the problem about misinformation after the Boston bombing was far from an isolated incident, an issue with just related to InfoWars. In the absence of official solid information, you know, that's, you know, kind of what led Alex down the road that he is on.
Right.
That also affected a lot of independent actors with motivations that we can really only guess at. Some people were willfully trying to mislead people, like Alex, you know, for attention.
Sure.
There were cottage industry conspiracy blogs that were trying to drive traffic who were posting the same kind of stuff. But there were also people who were likely just trying to cause chaos.
Yeah.
There were people creating fake profiles for the Tsarnaev brothers on social media, attempting to inject their own details into the conspiracy theories about the attack.
Because humans are fucked up people. Mm-hmm.
This was something that was very much on the rise at the time. Tons of fake accounts for Aurora shooter James Holmes and the murdering cop Christopher Dorner had been created. Some probably as jokes, but some probably more malicious in intention. NBC News reported that many of these accounts were being used to spread the conspiracy theories themselves about the bombing.
Yeah, why not?
Another thing that was happening at the time was that botnets were using fake articles about the bombing to spread spam and malware, hoping to capitalize on the public's hunger for information about what had happened. Cisco put out a warning that this was happening and warned that one of the attempts was related to an email that appeared to be from CNN. I know you want to make a thong
joke. I'm not doing it. I'm smiling so hard.
You were biting your lip.
I know. I'm trying not to make it.
Jesus.
I'm not making it.
You were about to. If I didn't say something, you were
100%. I was not. You saw me biting my lip.
Let me see that
link. Stop it. Not you're doing it.
Despite you. So one of the things was a CNN, looked like a CNN email with the headline, quote, Boston Marathon Explosions, FBI Benefits, ?
Oh, God.
Some apparent censorship of conspiracy content around this time was related to protecting users from these botnets that were trying to hijack their computers. In a crisis like this, people who are up to no good go to work. The public really wants to know what's going on, and when they're not getting that information, they're way more likely to fall for bullshit or fall victim to cyber attacks. So you exploit that hunger for information.
Of course.
And get people to click on things they probably wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what the bigger picture of what Alex is talking about. And there were definitely plenty of horrible things that Facebook did nothing to block or censor in the days after the bombing. For instance, there was a 22-year-old Brown University student named Sunil Tripathi who had been missing since March. And he's someone who the internet decided to turn into a suspect in the bombing. Sunil's family had set up a Facebook page hoping he'd see it and be encouraged that he could come home or reach out. In the days after the bombing, that page got bombarded with tons of hateful posts from people who decided that Sunil had been involved in the bombing of the marathon. And then on April 23rd, Sunil's body was found in the Providence River, with a subsequent autopsy ruling that the cause of death was suicide. I'm not aware of any evidence that the witch hunt was related to his death, and he'd been missing since before the bombing. But the witch hunt did traumatize these terrified family who wanted to find their son. Facebook did not take down these posts that were harassing his family.
Cool.
And eventually the family just ended up taking down that page themselves.
Yeah.
I think Alex, you know, he's talking about the backpack thing, these articles about the backpacks. But I think he's also referencing this because Facebook had blocked links to an article that he had about the manipulatively edited Family Guy episode, which I think is pretty easy to understand. I'm sure that Seth MacFarlane had made a copyright claim, and they were completely distorting his intellectual property in ways that I don't think are covered by fair use. You can use copyrighted material in a transformative way, but I'm not sure that you can then use that recreated thing to claim that that distorted material is representative of what the original was.
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's still not allowed.
Right.
You can't claim it's the original.
I think you can just DMCA it if you're an asshole.
Or I don't think that Seth MacFarlane would be being an asshole in that circumstance.
No. I mean the other direction. Like,
right.
If Alex is an asshole, you can still be like,
yeah, yeah.
They DMCA is used to take down shit that is technically fair use all the fucking time. Like, they err on the side of a giant corporation says no.
This wasn't a commentary as much as it was a distortion and a hoax.
Yeah, yeah.
So if that is part of the argument, then, I mean, take that shit down. But like you said in that clip, he's talking about the backpack stuff. And later in the episode, he does articulate that a little bit more. And it's about these articles where he's saying that these Navy SEALs are at the marathon. And again, he just decided that these were SEALs based on looking at some pictures he found on 4chan.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened with Facebook, like that they blocked all the links to this.
Oh, they went evil.
But you know what? If it did, I don't know how widespread the blocking was. But if they were blocked, I fully support that decision.
Oh, yeah.
Alex was engaged in targeted harassment of the people in those photos. He had literally zero reason to suspect them of being involved in this terrorist attack outside of things he'd imagined. He was publishing articles speculating that they were there as part of a grand false flag operation that left hundreds injured and three dead. I don't necessarily believe that Facebook blocked all the links to his article, but if they did, I don't care. They should have.
Yeah, this is as real as if he blamed the fucking elves for it. And it's as damaging as if he blamed normal people who didn't do it and then told people to harass them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, Jordan, we're like 15 minutes into his episode here, and so far, Alex has barely even touched on current events in Boston.
Yeah, he should be doing a victory
lap
right
now. You noticed this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He should be Nipsey hustling a victory lap right now.
Yeah, he briefly mentioned that the city is under martial law, which it's not, and he's not really giving any updates, nor does he even seem that interested that like this is a lead story. This episode so far has mostly been about him rambling about how he was right about Drill. And truth be told, he feels more focused on the Oath Keepers getting to have their rally than he is on the outbreak of literal martial law, according to him. And that seems weird. The behavior you would expect from Alex Jones when the appearance of martial law comes is to get on air and call all patriots to Boston.
Sure.
This should be war.
Yeah.
He should be talking about how good it is that the Oath Keepers are in Boston so they can make the first offense to liberate the people of the city from tyranny.
Right.
Alex's entire career has been built about warning that the police state is coming, and now here is as close as he's seen in the United States, and he seems to want to avoid the story.
Right.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, based on what we know now, I think he realizes that white people are going to be fine, so it's not that big a deal.
I don't know if that's the case.
No, it might be that he realizes that if he were to go, in his words, full tilt boogie, we might actually get a lot of people killed.
I think that's a possibility.
Yeah.
The options that I see are the first is that he realizes that what's going on is a legitimate police operation. It's completely legal, and they do need to find this terrorist who's on the loose.
Yeah.
He knows that if he does anything that might impede the carrying out of the investigation, then God forbid, like this guy blows up another building, then Alex is going to have a lot of blood on his hands.
Oh, yeah.
He does not want to be involved in that.
And fucking a real good case for obstruction of justice charges.
I don't know if you could do that.
We'll see.
It's so by proxy. Yeah. I don't think that would stick. I think it would just be a thing where it's like, I am a monster.
I don't think we have to worry about him caring about that.
There's a limit, I think.
And you think so?
Yes.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know. I like to think there's a limit.
You're an optimist.
Maybe.
I will give you that.
Glass quarter full.
Yeah.
So the other possibility is what you touched on, and that is I would describe as Alex is scared. This is a point, this is the point he's been yelling about forever, because he was betting that it would never come. Mm-hmm. Like, he would never have to pay up. This is Alex's chickens coming home to roost. He's made millions of dollars rambling about how if the government ever got out of line, him and his Patriot buddies would shoot them and restore the Republic. He was safe to do this because I'm sure he never imagined something like this would happen. But now it is, or at least the appearance of it is, and heavily armed police are searching houses door to door, and people are being asked to stay indoors. In order for Alex to stay in any way consistent to what he yells about all the time, he has to call for armed resistance. And he really doesn't want to do that.
No.
His ratings are way up, and he obviously is bringing in way more money than he was a week ago. And if possible, he'd like to keep that going. Calling for armed resistance to police officers trying to find the surviving Boston bombing suspect is probably going to hurt that a little bit.
Real cut off your nose to spite your face kind of situation there, yeah.
I suspect, but cannot prove, that Alex has already gotten everything he needs out of this tragedy. He found his narrative that this was a false flag. He's gotten an insane amount of internet exposure, and he's driven tons of traffic to his sites. So while the appearance of police tyranny descending on the city does play into his narratives, it's also too much. It would be very difficult for him to engage with the story how he normally would without it being to the point where the line in the sand has been crossed. And that's something he just can't afford to do as a business.
Yeah. Because in his, I mean, literally, it is the appearance of exactly the sequence of events as well. It is literally a crisis. They pick, blah, they do this, they do this. Yeah. There's an increased police presence. Yeah. There's the governor declaring this. The National Guard is coming in. That means that the steps for which to Hegelian dialectic your way into tyranny are all in place. So the only logical thing for him to say is let's blow up Boston.
Right. Alex is like the way his narratives work is that the globalists cannot ever actually start taking people to FEMA camps. It has to always be about to happen. The globalists have to always be making their move. They can't actually be doing the martial law shit that Alex says they plan to do. That in-between state is where the money is, because if the story is that martial law is in place, then all of Alex's rhetoric should tell any listener who's paying attention that it's time to start shooting. And that cuts into profits. So I think Alex wants to foster this image, but at the same time, stay the fuck away from
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's weird.
Yeah.
The only explanation rationally to me are those possibilities, because someone who presents themselves like Alex does in every context that I've heard would be screaming about this.
Oh, absolutely.
The only possibility I see is that he realizes it's too hot in the kitchen and his behavior could have a really serious negative effect. Now, what he thinks the negative effect is, that's debatable.
Yeah.
But I see him being like, this is too hot.
Oh, this is too much. If I keep going, I'm going to lose money. Yeah, boss, about all the people that are going to die. No. I could lose a lot of money if this goes on. There's going to be a war. I know. That's why I'd lose all this money. Okay. You're a bad person.
We are just
moving on.
Quadrupling, quintupling traffic, right?
Yeah.
Is now the time to get kicked off air? Because I called for insurrection?
Yeah.
Is now the time?
Really? We're going to civil war now, huh? Oh, God damn.
Just my luck.
Yeah. This is a Kathy cartoon where he just goes, ah!
I do feel that sense here because he's not talking about what matters.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's weird. But what he wants to do instead is just keep talking about the same shit he's been talking about this whole time. Namely, that his pictures that he found on 4chan changed the game.
Sure.
They've done this over and over again where they'll have multiple fallbacks. So we released these photos when they didn't think anybody noticed them. Right as they're announcing, we've got our person. CNN's like, we're told it's a right-wing lone wolf, one man. We've got the right-winger. It's going to come out. He's arrested. He's at the courthouse. Then they panic and go, no, forget that. There's no arrest. Forget it. And let's all go to sleep. And let's evacuate the courthouse and forget you ever saw that. And I said, they're going from the right-wingers probably to now they're going to go with a Muslim. And I said that. Because why'd they have all these Muslims clearly crawling around there, obviously part of it with their body language and everything, probably thinking they're patriots,
crawling?
You know, who've been recruited out of colleges. And these guys were clearly recruited out of colleges. Now, could they be double agents for some Muslim group? Yes, they could be real.
What?
Insane. Obviously.
You don't get that one. No.
Obviously, everyone listening to our show at this point realizes that everything Alex is saying is just based on his fantasies that he's constructed after seeing some pictures he found on 4chan. None of this is real. None of it's based on anything other than his feelings. However, there's one thing here I think that merits pointing out. Alex has no idea if any of the people in the pictures he saw were actually Muslims. All he knows is that they're non-white people, possibly of Middle Eastern descent. But past that, he has no reason to believe the people in these images from 4chan are followers of Islam. He sees brown people in the pictures, and their skin proves to him what group they're a part of, which to me is a bad sign.
Yeah, I mean, the one luxury of othering is that when the other is so big, you can just call the other whatever you want, you know?
And it's like whether or not anybody in those pictures turned out to actually be Muslim is kind of irrelevant to Alex's assumptions.
It has nothing to do with anything.
Right, it's very strange.
If they aren't now, they were.
So much of his narrative is based on characteristics that he's imagined about people in these pictures. He sees brown people, they must be Muslims. He sees a white guy, he must be a redneck idiot who's been brought in to be the patsy. He sees guys in uniforms, they must be Navy SEALs or mercenary groups. Not one single thing about these people in these photos is actually substantiated. It's just taken as true because Alex has asserted these things to be true. When we talk about Alex not knowing the difference between reality and fiction, it's usually in the context of him thinking that movies he's seen are real. That's definitely the place where the tendency is most pronounced, but it's important to remember that this exists in other contexts. Here he's written a complete fiction about some pictures he saw that he found on 4chan, and he experiences that as reality. It's almost like an author falling in love with a character in a novel that they're writing. He either knows he's doing this and that he's willfully misleading his audience into accepting his fiction as reality for his own profit, which would make him a psychopath, or he has no idea he's doing that to people, which means he needs serious help. Regardless of the explanation, someone should have intervened in Alex's life long ago.
Yeah.
It's real bummer to see these signs, these warning signs, so clear.
Yeah.
And, like, I wasn't paying attention to Alex in 2013, although I hope that would have been my response to hearing this.
Right.
Like, I can't imagine someone in his life not being like, this is fucked up. Now, it's working.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine if you're anything other than, if you're anything other than a very dedicated, active listener, then you could, you know, rationalize away all of this shit. If you didn't have an active, like, consistent point of view regarding everything he said and tracking it over time, you'd just be like coming in and out, and he'd say nonsense like a movie, and he'd be like, oh, it's like a movie, and then he'd go back to screaming, and he'd be like, oh, I get it.
I don't think that
he's
most...
He's just referencing a movie. Yeah. He's not saying that reality is a movie, like in that movie that John Candy was in.
Right. I don't think that most people who would have any interest in critically looking at what he's doing have the stomach to actually listen to his show,
exactly.
Particularly back then.
Right.
So I think that a lot of it flies under the radar, and most of the people listening are passive or interested. And, you know, these signs just get missed. But there is, like...
For sure.
There is either a willful attempt to get people to accept an alternate reality or an inability to know what's real.
Yeah.
And either option is pretty fucking scary.
Yeah.
So Alex gets into talking about the situation in Boston a little bit. He has some little points that he brings up. But again, there's not much going on talking about the situation of the shelter in place.
All over Boston, all the way into Connecticut, aiming guns at people at checkpoints, threatening to kill AP reporters, AP's reporting, going in houses, house to house, a giant martial law exercise, and now there was a shootout. They're going to blame the Second Amendment. Now, he's leaving Lexington Green. The police were going to block them, but, I mean, Larry Pratt and Stewart said, you know, you're violating our rights, and so they backed off.
That's the first reference to the shootout from the night before, and he's only referencing it vaguely. And he's only doing it to try and say, like, they're going to take our guns, which is wild.
Yeah,
I can find no evidence that an AP reporter was threatened by the police during the hunt for Zohar Sarnaev. I'm not saying that it definitely didn't happen, but I'm saying that I can't find any trace of the story on the AP's website, nor on InfoWars, not even in archived versions of the sites from the time. I don't know what the reality is here, but I have every reason to believe Alex is just kind of riffing or just embellishing. Later, someone attempts to correct Alex that what happened was that the police were warning reporters who had been out on the night before at the shootout in Watertown that there was an active shooting going on, and if they weren't careful, they'd get shot. This is very different than police threatening to shoot reporters, but it definitely sounds like the sort of thing Alex would misreport as police threatening to shoot reporters.
Right. Now, if Trump was talking and he said, hey, you might get shot if you stick around out here, then we're talking about somebody threatening to shoot reporters.
In this circumstance, if Trump was the police commissioner or whatever who was on the scene, I would still not think it was a threat because it is a legitimate warning. There's an 8-minute live shooting where the guys are throwing fucking IEDs at police.
Right. I'm just talking about the way the mob people.
Right. I
protection.
Understand what you mean. Hey, you might get shot. Hey,
you know, if you go outside, you might get shot. I'm just saying.
That might be what's going on, like this, like misunderstanding or misrepresentation of police warnings. That might be what Alex is talking about, but I'm not certain.
Yeah.
There might have been a dust up between a cop and a reporter that I just can't find a record of. I have no idea. However, that clip is a really good encapsulation of how Alex is dealing with the supposed martial law in Boston. He touches on it for a second, but only to use it as a way to amplify the other things he wants to talk about, like how the Oath Keepers can't have a permit for their rally or how the globalists want your guns. Those are safe topics for him to stay on because they don't involve him getting backed into a corner by his own rhetoric. The Oath Keepers are obviously still having their rally and no one's going to stop them. And no one is taking anyone's guns. So it's totally fine to agitate about those topics. You're only creating hypothetical extremists. If Alex were to really spend any time on the fact that, according to his own worldview, martial law is here and he's pretty consistently advocated fighting martial law, he would very quickly end up advocating violence against the police. It's a real sign of cowardice, what he's doing, and a clear indication that his words are just talk. If he believed half the shit he yells about on his show, this would be a put-up-or-shut-up moment, and he's instead just decided to change the subject.
Yeah. We haven't gotten to the end yet, but I'd be surprised nobody called in saying, like, is it time to start a fucking war?
No one called in and said that. There were some people who brought up stuff related to the shootout from the night before. Or the shelter-in-place request. But it's not dealt with in any meaningful way.
Yeah, because it's
Alex
like
doesn't
that would
cover
be...
it as a story.
Right.
It doesn't... It's weird.
That is... Because I would have... I mean, I would think that some of his crazier wackos would have called in and been like, "It's if you're saying there's martial law and all this stuff," and give him a detailed list and then be like, "You've said it's time to start swinging."
Don't worry. Kind of there are some crazy wackos.
Okay.
But I think they manifest in slightly different directions.
Gotcha.
But we'll deal with
I'm a bear! Okay, man.
Close.
Yeah. Okay.
So Alex is doing this to... He brings up the shootout from the night before, but only as a way to weave into his own narratives, the gun stuff, and as a way to bring in Stuart Rhodes. So he has Stuart Rhodes, the head of the Oath Keepers, on the show, to talk about the situation in Lexington Green with their permit.
Right.
And it's a stupid.
A lot of good insight coming.
Stupid interview. I don't really care. They still had their ceremony, and I don't give a fuck.
Okay, fine. Fuck off then.
But in their conversation, Stuart Rhodes says some super fucked up things.
So in response to this, it should be we all turn out and we hunt him down. You know who your neighbors are. You know who belongs and who don't. In pretty short order, you could have found him. But instead, the message is, there's a wolf around. Now all you sheep must stay in your pens, stay in your barns, and let us professional sheep herders and sheep dogs hunt down the wolf. You stay in your house. We'll come into your house one by one and search it to make sure, you know, us authorized professionals will do it. That's exactly
and make a giant scene and make a giant scene out of it. I predict that if he was in an area of Texas, he'd already be dead.
He'd be dead. That's exactly right. What you do, the answer is, let us have guns so we can turn out and go hunt him down.
Couple quick points. Stuart Rhodes is a complete lunatic. If he thinks that random armed civilians wandering around in posses would have a preferable solution to what happened in Boston. It didn't happen, so we can only guess. But you have to imagine that a whole bunch of people would have been shot who had nothing to do with the bombing.
How many phone calls did the 911 guys get?
500.
500. And so we're saying that all of those people are probably...
They're all
authorized. So the people who, you know, they were calling a tip on, they're fucking dead in Stuart Rhodes' world.
Or at least winged.
Yeah.
You wing them.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. What fucking morons.
And that's one thing to think about, but a much more concrete version is that there were tons of false suspects who got floated by the internet, which led to tons of targeted harassment.
Yeah, of course.
You have to kind of assume that if groups of armed people felt emboldened to take the law into their own hands, one of those people might have been killed.
Absolutely.
It's almost a miracle that no civilians were killed, as is, in the manhunt and everything. The police after-action report makes very strong points of saying that one of the main things that needed improvement, I've mentioned this already, was the weapons discipline. In the late-night shootout in Watertown, like I said, there was that crossfire situation that got created. After Johar got away, an erroneous report of a stolen truck was called in, which led to police shooting at said truck when they spotted it. No one was hurt, and it turned out the people in the truck were off-duty police who took the whole thing in stride, so that's good, I guess. Terrifying what could have happened.
Jesus.
But it resolved as well as it could have.
Imagine if it was one of those fucking right-wing weirdos. Then we're talking
or
about...
Or imagine if an errant shot hit the gas tank or something. Yeah. Like, it was all
Jesus
kinds of like...
Christ.
Yeah, that's why. That's what you talk about with weapons discipline. You need to be more careful than that.
Let's go to our resident historian. Have roving bands of vigilantes historically been good for people? They've never gotten it wrong, right? Roving band of vigilantes.
I realize you've set this up poorly because I don't do a good vuvuzela impression. These were bad mistakes made by the police, who are specifically trained in this sort of thing. It strains credulity to imagine that a ragtag posse would be any more disciplined with their use of weapons. I think this is a bad solution,
especially not one so fucking trigger happy as the Oath Keepers.
Bottom line of what I'm getting at, I want nothing less in life than for Stuart Rhodes-style posses to be empowered to enforce the law, particularly up to the point of using lethal force.
Yeah.
That's legitimately the stuff of nightmares. Now, as to Alex's contention that if this was happening in Texas, they would have found and killed this guy already, I beg to differ. In March 2018, 23-year-old Mark Condit carried out a string of bombings, ultimately killing two people and injuring six. His first bombing was on March 2nd, and his serial bombings would not end until March 21st. His reign of terror did not end because some Oathkeeper rounded up the boys and went hunting. It was because police did a thorough investigation and tracked Condit down and tried to arrest him. They were unsuccessful as he detonated a bomb he had in his car when they tried to pull him over, killing himself and injuring a cop. Vigilante activity did literally nothing to help in the case of this serial bomber who was on the loose in Texas. Nor did Alex's lunatic ravings about it all being a false flag on his show. So I guess that kind of disproves Alex's "we would have taken care of him in Texas" bravado bullshit. It's nonsense. You wouldn't have done shit.
These people are fucking children.
Yeah.
They're all fucking children playing out this imaginary cowboys and Indians until they fucking die.
Yeah. Why didn't Alex round up the boys when there was a bomber on the loose in Texas?
Oh, because he could have gotten hurt, Dan.
Probably.
What a fucking group of children. It is awful. It is awful that we live where these people have so much power.
Yeah. So Alex is talking to Stuart, and he's advocating straight up vigilante posses as a preferable solution to this, which I cannot imagine. You know what? A year later, if you'd polled that, I imagine it would not be 83% of Boston residents in favor. I would guess.
How do you guys feel about how the vigilante groups handled the Night of Terror as we know it now?
1,700 dead.
Yeah, 13% says it was a good idea. The rest of us are dead.
Did you enjoy the flimsy rationalization purge?
Yeah.
Boo.
For 24 hours, white people murdered.
So keep in mind in this next clip that the city of Boston is going through some real serious stuff.
Yeah.
And the surrounding towns as well. They're in a pretty messed up situation. Everybody's struggling. But Stuart Rhodes is also having a tough time.
We said this morning, we're going to go and do this. We're going to go on Lexington Green. I went there prepared to be arrested, as did a bunch of other veterans. And our message to the police was, look, you can either let us take 5 minutes and do our oath ceremony on the green, or you can process, or, you know, arrest and process all of these veterans and retired cops.
I mean, is this a free country? Is this a free country? Stay there.
You did have your rally. Like, you know that no one was going to arrest you. You did. Like, this is just crazy. Ugh. Blah. It's just milking it for all it's worth.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's lame.
This is that those two dudes who went into the pizza place and then came out and they were like, I was
Jack
so,
Posobiec.
I was shook. They were coming all over the place to tell.
You mean Jack Posobiec and
was
his
that
friend?
Him? Yeah, yes. Those fucking idiots.
So Alex is talking to Stuart Rhodes, and he wants Stuart to justify and second his belief that this is a false flag. And he's expecting Stuart's going to be like, yeah, absolutely. His take is a little bit different.
Stuart Rhodes, what do you say about the false flag angle of this? Because they don't want us to look at these Navy SEALs and what looks like special forces of other branches crawling all over right before the bomb happened. What do you say from your research?
Well, I mean, I can't, like I said the other day when I was talking to you, I can't tell by someone's clothing who they are.
Ooh, swing and a miss. Oh, Alex, you got the Oath Keeper guy on the phone, and he won't back you up that it was Navy SEALs.
That's crazy. I don't like him being the one who's like, I can't identify somebody by their clothing.
This is why
Alex was shocked by that, right?
This is why I say that there are lines.
Yeah.
There are unexpected lines that people have, and I'd never know how to predict what they are. Like, Alex probably would feel guilty if his behavior in some way impeded an investigation that ended to a building being blown up.
Yeah.
Publicly, he would probably say that that explosion was a false flag.
False flag, for sure.
But in his quieter moments, I'm sure he'd feel terrible about it.
You would hope.
But again, the line's impossible to predict. I never would have guessed that Stuart Rhodes would have been like, I have no idea who these people are.
I don't do profiling. What the fuck are you talking about? You're literally advocating going around and shooting brown people for fun, and you're the one who's going to be like...
Look, you know your neighborhood. You know who's not supposed to be there.
Yeah. What the fuck are you talking about? How are you going to identify who's not supposed to be there if you're...
Right.
I don't judge by clothing.
Right. I'm saying lines are weird. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
Alex, please. We use skin color, not clothing. Thank you very much.
That does seem to be what he's maybe comfortable with, though probably wouldn't articulate.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, we finally have the younger bomber's name. Alex finally knows who it is. I believe this is the first time that he says it.
Jokhar Tsarnaev is supposedly the young, skinny man that we all nationwide. Why not put the whole country under martial law? Why not put 315 million people in prison because of this? They are all over Boston, surrounding suburbs, into Connecticut, at checkpoints, pointing their M4s at men and women in their cars, jerking people out, going in houses. They're about to have a press conference. I was just watching it out there with just incredible, off-the-chart, unbelievable grandstanding. Grandstanding going on.
This is about as much as it gets, you know, like in terms of coverage of this stuff. Like, this is about, like, he says that a couple times. Cities under martial law. Like, you'd expect getting into it.
Yeah.
Not just stray mentions on the way to other topics.
Yeah, he is just tossing off the idea that an entire city is under martial law. Whenever he spent his entire career saying that if a city goes under martial law, that's the signal that they're going to take over the country and kill us all and disarm us and so on and so forth. Not just like, oh yeah, Boston's under martial law. Whatevs today, right?
You would expect at very least his angle on it would be, all right, let's not panic about this. This is a temporary law enforcement activity that is way beyond the realm of what's acceptable.
Yeah.
What we need to focus on is that this is a trial run or something like that. They will lift the martial law, but it's practice. And I'm certain that that is where Alex will land eventually.
Yeah.
But you would expect that would be because he needs to cover this. And instead of covering it, it's just, like I said, asides.
I mean,
stray mentions.
That's an angle that you're not going to get in the moment, I don't think. Because that's a solid.
I think it'd be so easy
in the moment.
Yeah.
If you're Alex,
he woke up early that day. He's had time to ruminate and think.
All right, you're assuming that he does work before he gets to work.
Right, but it turns out most of his work is actually just reading negative articles about himself.
Okay, of course, this is the day for that.
Yeah.
The L.A. Times is reporting that I am basically a big, fat, giant, demonic rat. It says internet sewer and shows a manhole sewer cover. And it says right on schedule, the vermin surface. The U.S. government orchestrated the Boston Marathon bombing. Obama did it so he can take our guns. He used Navy SEALs backed up by flying monkeys from Oz. That's the L.A. Times. Oh, L.A. Times. Alex Jones has a sick theory about the Boston Marathon bombings. L.A. Times. David Horsey. Now, oh, wait, but I have a problem here for him. What does this say? For radio listeners, you can go to the Washington Post. This is the Washington Times. There's also a blurb in the Washington Post. With backpacks at Boston Marathon, private contractors?
Yeah.
And it goes on. to say that they've denied that or won't comment, but that sure enough, these look like people wearing Kraft International uniforms. That is a sheep dip group for Navy SEALs. And they look like Navy SEALs.
They look like them. So Kraft International is like a group that
they make cheeses. And,
yeah, that's right. No, they're like a contracting group.
Gotcha.
That the internet had decided that they were the people who Alex saw with the backpacks.
Sure, why not?
Who were actually the civil support teams who were called in.
Yeah.
Who are at every large event,
right.
Like we talked about. They're at every home football game.
Yep.
So whatever. But that's what the new preoccupation is on the internet that is now starting to seep into Alex's conversation about it. David Knight has been more on this prior to this, but Alex hasn't been talking about Kraft itself that much. But now it's so anyway. That's just for context. It is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It may seem like a little minor slip up that Alex tries to refute that LA Times story with the Washington Times headline and that he tries to pass off as a Washington Post headline. But if you know what these papers are, that looks less like a mistake and more like sleight of hand. The Washington Post is a mainstream media paper. So if they're publishing an article speculating about how there may have been these Kraft International agents at the marathon, it lends things a bit more credibility, which is exactly what Alex is trying to achieve by citing this story. For the story to make it to the WAPO, it would need to pass layers of editors, so it carries a bit more weight. Conversely, the Washington Times is a completely untrustworthy pseudo-news outlet founded by the cult leader Reverend Sun Yung Moon. Moon said, quote, "I founded the Washington Times as an expression of my love for America and to fulfill the will of God, who seeks to establish America in his providence."
That's that's the operating philosophy for most of the Fourth Estate, right?
Sure.
I'm pretty sure that's how they all started.
Yeah. These intentions, concretely translated to taking an over-the-top anti-communist position in pretty much all of his
writing.
Right.
It is strange how that tends to happen.
In its early days, the paper was mainly about how great the Cold War was. And then after the fall of the USSR, they pivoted towards communist menaces in South America.
Gotta watch out for them.
The Washington Times sucks, and no unbiased person would take it seriously. But you can see why Alex might think it's a good source. He comes from an insane John Birch Society family, so you can easily imagine him growing up with the Washington Times as a credible outlet. But Alex isn't totally crazy. He knows that most people look at the Times as unreliable and the Post as a normal news publication. It doesn't make Alex look better to appeal to a Times headline, but it does make if the that headline is in the Washington Post.
Yeah.
That's why he says it's a Washington Post headline, then pauses and lets out a big sigh when he realizes it's a Washington Times story. That's a sigh of disappointment that he doesn't have the MSM gotcha moment that he was building up to. That's telling.
Yeah. It's also pretty brilliant reacting in the moment to be like, there's also a blurb in the Post. Because that makes it seem like, oh, the mistake is just, I don't have time now to pull up the Post article.
Right.
I've already got the Times article in front of me. There's a blurb about it in the Post, but I'm just going to reference the one that I have in front of me.
And he does that repeatedly.
I just don't have time.
He does that repeatedly, like directly citing the Washington Times article and saying it's also in the Post.
Exactly.
He says that like three times throughout this show.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he's sort of spinning his wheels, and like we know there's a 1 to 3 to 5% chance that this was a real terrorist attack.
Right.
And he's like, maybe it is true.
Which at that rate of speed, by now we're at 100% that it was a real attack. If it's 1 to 3 to 5 that quick, then we assume that it's 7, 10. I would say it's at 100% now if it's past 10 minutes.
I'm not going to, I mean, he doesn't quantify it, so I don't know the number exactly, but here's where he's at.
Jokar is the one living. And Czar Nav is the last name, and Tamerlan is the supposed larger boxer brother who's dead. I mean, who knows if any of it's true? Maybe it's all true. Maybe none of it's true. All I know is...
Are we up to 50-50?
You acted guilty as sin when drills and stand-downs were brought up at those three press conferences. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, when we plugged Infowars.com, whenever Dan Bedondi, our reporter, in the third press conference... After they canceled the others. And by the way, the police and FBI came over and said, you and InfoWars are going to be good now, right? You're not going to cause a problem. And why didn't they arrest him or throw him out? They didn't want to make a scene in front of all the reporters.
Well, because he also wasn't committing a crime.
Yeah.
Like they were just, they dealt with him as an annoying nuisance, which is what he was. They didn't act guilty as sin. You can go watch those videos. They're just like, no. Next.
Yeah.
And the way Alex is framing this, you really got to ask some questions, because he didn't say, like, when we got the truth out. He's like, when we plugged InfoWars.
Yeah.
That's how he views this. Yeah, it's a publicity stunt.
We plugged InfoWars.
Right. You should have seen them so scared when we plugged InfoWars.
Yeah, they were so guilty.
This is all just PR. Yeah. That's how he understands what happened. It's not a greater truth is out. It's more eyes are on me.
Yep.
And he loves it. So unfortunately, he doesn't have a big staff at this point. Apparently, Rob Jacobson and one of the other employees, who I can't remember who it is, they're on assignment in California doing something. I wonder what that fucking thing is.
He may have fewer employees right now, but his show still seems to run fairly well. Being able to play any of his clips or...
I think he's running also a scaled-down operation at this point.
Yeah. That's fair.
Like, he's still doing it as a radio and TV show, but he doesn't have that giant million-dollar studio going. He has a lot less moving parts.
Probably a smart idea to downsize.
I think a lot of the people who are working there are people who have been there for a while.
Yeah.
With the exception of the reporters who have won contests. I think some of the, like, behind-the-scenes people are probably pretty competent who have been around for a bit.
Yeah.
So I think that you have an ease compared to what he's dealing with right now. But unfortunately, because of this thinned out staff, like I said, Jacobson, California, Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton have just left to start their own offshoot, their own operation. And so everybody else has just run ragged.
Yeah.
Paul Joseph Watson's been working for days straight.
Oh, nonstop.
David Knight, Jakari Jackson are tired as hell from doing the nightly news.
Carrying those live waters.
Leanne McAdoo is new.
Oh, she doesn't even know it. Where Boston is.
They do play a special report of hers about drones.
Yeah.
And it's remarkably competent.
Really?
It is not sensational. She is citing sources.
What?
It's really weird.
She's new. She probably thought that she's supposed to be doing the job.
New broom sweeps clean.
Yeah.
There is a sense, and I think probably a number of people who work at InfoWars go through this. I think in the early time, they probably think they're doing something real.
Right.
And they might try.
Right.
But he plays that report and is like, damn, that didn't feel like InfoWars. It's still like pointing a finger at Obama.
Yeah.
But also doing it in a way, in a context that is...
Drone strikes are bad, and they are Obama's fault.
Right.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And, God damn it.
And the main point of it seemed to be largely about, saying that we precision target these drones, and that's clearly not true.
Yeah.
You're like, what is going on here? Very weird.
That's wild.
I don't have any clips of it, because in order to sort of demonstrate my point, we'd have to listen to the whole thing, and it's like 4 minutes long or something. Yeah. It's not worth that. But anyway, I was shocked. It's very strange, because, the day before, on the 18th, she was the one who came up with the different color backpacks theory.
Yes.
That's terrible work.
The brilliant terrible different color backpacks. No, they're different color backpacks. Genius.
Yeah. And then this special report. Fairly competent.
That's crazy.
It's weird. The yin and yang of new InfoWars employees.
gotta be dumb enough to come up with the different color backpack theory. And we got to beat out the whole journalistic integrity after overtime.
Yeah. Or you just realize you don't have to, so why try?
Oh, that's fair.
There's no standards. So,
right.
Whatever. But he doesn't have enough staff to cut clips of things that he's seen in the news.
Sure.
And this, I believe, is the beginning of the narrative pivoting.
I have a limited crew, and I have a limited staff. And I already had interviews for upcoming films. A lot of my crew's out in California right now. But I need listeners to do this. We need to get, and we have a bunch of these clips coming up. We probably have, I don't know, let's not exaggerate, 15 clips of Chris Matthews on MSNBC and CNN and guest of our favorite redcoat, Piers Morgan. And everybody on CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, even Fox saying this will probably end up being military vets that are disgruntled. Maybe even Navy SEALs. I saw CNN and MSNBC four times. And believe me, I'm not watching the news. It's kind of on during breaks and on while I'm doing research, or I'll see it on YouTube. Four times say Navy SEALs. In fact, before we saw these photos of Navy SEALs, I guess it was Wednesday. So we found out about this Wednesday. Tuesday, I saw CNN, and then I saw texts of other shows saying, and people sent me transcripts of them going, it could be like disgruntled Navy SEALs. So now that tells me, and these were like globalist operatives on TV, top FBI analyst, could be Navy SEALs. What? So we've got to go dig all that creepiness up. They were actually thinking about framing Navy SEALs. Because, I mean, who would come up with Navy SEALs?
You.
George Norrie. on the same Coast to Coast episode you were on. Look, I don't know. I don't care about this. This is dumb. But it is very important. Because earlier in this episode, Alex had done his normal. They were going to blame this white patsy.
Yeah,
and then they've switched to the Muslim option. Now he's saying all along they intended to blame
the
Marines, the SEALs.
Yeah.
So this is a fundamental change in his narrative, because that dude, the white patsy that Alex had picked out, is not a military guy. He is not a Navy SEAL.
Right.
None of the people in those pictures that he's pointing to are necessarily Navy SEALs.
Right. Well, you know what the mistake was, right? So they only said Navy SEALs four times. Everybody knows that in order for the Navy SEALs to appear, you have to say it five times into
the
mirror.
It's not a Beetlejuice situation.
Yeah, you have to say it five times into the mirror.
Whatever is going on is a fundamental shift. Like, this undoes a lot of the point of everything he's been saying.
Yeah.
If they had planned
it's Navy SEALs, then why would they try and use that to take away your guns, you fucking idiot?
Well, because they need to get the military in line for the takeover or whatever.
Sure, fine.
Sure. It all is crazy. But what's so interesting about listening to this show is, like, how disjointed it is. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, if you're thinking and listening, this is a problem for the earlier days, certainly, because it's a very different narrative being sold. But I don't think that his audience has trouble with it.
No, I think
they're just like, oh, that makes sense. And it doesn't make sense.
His narrative is like an amorphous blob that is just like certain parts just expand at one moment and then they come back in and then another part expands and it just keeps rolling along.
It
rolling
fits through
along.
Little holes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that show that Stephen Colbert pitched back in the day, The No Bone Zone.
Yes.
People with no bones try to fit through a hole. The No Bone Zone. So Alex has now decided that this is a plan to set up the Marines. And so he's also decided that the people that he's seen in these pictures that he found on 4chan are Kraft International. And so in this next clip, he talks about how they should reach out to Kraft International. He claims that they already tried to call them.
Sure.
But the way he's discussing this makes me think he has not.
And by the way, we tried to put calls into Kraft. I'm going to put more calls into them. By the way, I should open the phones up specifically for people. I mean, here, I bet Kraft's listening right now. You're welcome to call in. You're absolutely welcome. In fact, I want to tell my reporters, David Knight and Jakari Jackson and everybody else that's here, I want you to all call Kraft right now officially and get statements.
Officially?
We need to be doing all this work right now.
Shouldn't you say again?
Well,
it
they
feels
were calling,
like they haven't called.
They were calling them socially before. They were just giving them a nice call. They wanted to see if they wanted to go get a drink later. Now it's time to officially say we are InfoWars employees and we would like your statement.
It doesn't seem like they've called. It seems like he just realized that and then he's saying, well, we tried.
I mean, technically, they tried to get to the phone to call Kraft, but they didn't even make it all the way to the phone. You could say they tried to call Kraft.
Whenever you are a journalistic enterprise and you do reach out to somebody, there is formality to, like, they say no comment or they don't return calls.
Right.
And Alex isn't expressing that. He's saying we tried to call them.
Yeah, we gave him a shot. Line was busy.
It doesn't feel real.
No.
Anyway, Alex now reads a comment from InfoWars. And as we learned from the last time he tried to do this, it got racist really fast.
I know. Is Barnes going to drop two N-words on this one?
That was Pattis.
Whatever. They're the same.
He tries to read, and he sets this up by saying, I really agree with this comment.
And I want to read a comment here from the InfoWars.com article I was just mentioning that I agree with. I want to read this here. Plan A was the white Tea Party.
White.
Lone wolf gun owner. But that was called off due to exposure. So plan B was to get the Muslim guys. Plan C might have been blacks or gays. Actually, I don't agree with that now.
Weird. Weird. Comment got weird.
I agreed with all of this up until I read the last part out loud and realized I'm not supposed to say that out loud.
Comment got weird.
Yeah.
As is the case with pretty much all comments on Infowars.com.
Right.
But it's interesting because it's easy to hear that and be like, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Like, just sort of trying to write off the comment.
Yeah.
And he doesn't read any more of the comment.
Oh, no. Is there more of the comment?
No. I can't find his comments anymore. They're all gone from the internet. But
Plan D is the Irish. Plan E is everyone from Ethiopia.
No, we don't know where that goes, but it would be easy to hear that and hear him say, I don't agree with that, as indicative of being like, they were going to blame the blacks and the gays.
Yeah.
That is not what he's disagreeing with. He's disagreeing with the fundamental assumption here. And this is part of the pivoting of the narrative.
Actually, I don't agree with that now. I have, and I know I said that day one was the pre-programming, it was even worse. They were planning, or at least it was being discussed, to blame Navy SEALs. Because, again, all over the news, they kept saying, it's probably a disgruntled vet, like a Navy SEAL. And we're going to compile all those videos where they said that, Navy SEAL, Navy SEAL. We need your help doing it. I know I've seen it.
You need more staff.
That's bananas.
The thing about this is, like, he's saying that they're planning to blame the SEALs, or at least they talked about it. What are you basing that on?
Well,
you don't know any conversations that anyone had. You're just making that up.
Right. Well, of course. I think he's trying to say that he's extrapolating that.
Right.
They must have had those conversations because I did hear them say Navy SEAL four times, which means, obviously, if you reverse engineer it, that means 6 months ago they said we were going to blame a Navy SEAL.
Expressing it that way holds a lot less water.
Oh, yeah.
They've had conversations.
Yeah.
Fuck.
What is brilliant... And I think it's probably accidental, but what is brilliant is putting it on his audience to put those clips together instead of having to do it himself.
Sure.
Because then if you don't get it, and if you don't play those clips in that super...
We're working on it.
Then, well, hey, that's your fault, audience. You're the ones who didn't do it.
Or you can permanently be like, the audience is putting it together. We're going to have that right
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. Yeah, that's genius.
Yeah. But the narrative's pivoting, buddy. It's now they were planning to set up the Marines all along. Alex has put the pieces together, and we are moving forward.
Hey, good work.
I had a click happen last hour, then I'm going to your calls, that is so horrible that it gave me the beginnings of a migraine headache, which I only get about once or twice a year, which is setting in right now. It made me so physically sick when it all clicked that since Tuesday, I have seen CNN, MSNBC, and CNBC... And newspapers, and I need all you to pull this up and help us.
And
I just mentioned 6:15, 6:30, something like that last night. CNN, what's her name? Aaron something? What's her name? The former CNBC host is on there with her expert, Aaron Burnett, thank you, saying it might be Navy SEALs, and this is the expert on there.
I will say that I can neither confirm nor deny that Aaron Burnett or her expert guest said such a thing on her show last night from when Alex was recording. Yeah. But I can give you some reasons why I don't think they did. What we're listening to right now is Alex's show from the 19th. The night before would have been the 18th. And if her show is taking place after 6 p.m., as Alex said, then it would have had to have been after the FBI press conference where the suspect photos were released. It seems very unlikely that a TV show host or her expert guest would be discussing the possibility that these people who did the bombing were disgruntled veterans after the photos of them had been released, and they're clearly both pretty young.
That's the type of shit you would do on InfoWars.
I mean, I guess it's possible. It's possible. You know, maybe maybe Alex has his timestamp wrong, and this was a pre-press conference TV show.
Sure.
But whatever the case, it seems like he's just pulling this out of thin air.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll get an update on this later in the show. We might.
Uh-oh.
Alex is so wrong. Alex goes to calls. And, man, some of these people are wild. The first guy that he talks to wants to talk about the white patsy in the pictures that Alex found from 4chan.
Okay.
The one thing that actually stands out, the guy in the blue jacket with the red shirt, the poor looking guy, that the bag actually matches his straps that he's got over his arms. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. The FBI released the exploded bag remnants, and it looks identical—a black backpack with a silver stripe on the strap.
Right. Right. Now, if you actually had a bag that you brought with you, okay, and you're in a big crowded area, you're going to carry your bag over your back.
You're going to carry it over your back. You're not going to have it right there like you're about to drop it.
Exactly.
And he looks suspicious. I mean, if I was a cop at the end of the marathon, that's the guy I'd be searching.
Exactly. He's the one that you would single out, you would pull him out of the crowd, you would try to figure out what's going on there.
Of course.
I have a fun thought experiment for you, Jordan.
Of course. That's exactly what I would do.
Let's imagine that no bombing took place at the Boston Marathon.
All right.
Do you think for a single second that Alex and this caller would even take a second look at a picture of a man carrying a backpack in front of himself? Do you think that rises to any level of suspicion?
Man, I'm really trying to find a funny way of saying yes, but it really doesn't. There's nothing.
Nope.
There's nothing.
Under the circumstances where there wasn't a bombing, your mind would see that picture and realize that the photograph takes one split second into consideration and doesn't tell you anything about what happened just before or just after. If there hadn't been a bombing, you would just see that, and any number of innocuous explanations would make sense. Maybe his back was tired. Maybe he'd just taken something out of the bag. Maybe he was preparing to take something out of the bag. Maybe he was going to give it to a friend to carry for a while. Also, maybe because his back was tired.
Why would you prepare to take something out of your backpack?
Maybe he'd just seen that Lionel report about backpacks being rude, and he was trying to not hit anybody with it.
If you saw the video, you would hear him under his breath going, Lionel. Taken off his backpack.
There's literally nothing suspicious about a person carrying a backpack not on their back, unless you desperately want to make it suspicious. Now, let's take this thought experiment a little bit further.
All right.
Let's imagine that there was no bombing at the marathon, and this guy did get searched and shaken down by the police. Could we imagine Alex in this alternative reality using that search as an example of a police state run amok? These two guys are talking about the idea of singling out and searching a guy as if it's just common sense that this is what you would do, when if it did happen, they'd almost certainly be opposed to it. What, you just think he looks weird?
Yeah.
And you're going to search him? It doesn't make any sense.
Yep. These people are stupid.
Right.
Very, very stupid.
But there's more.
No.
These guys apparently, maybe, when Alex was back in his community college days, maybe he took an entry-level psychology course.
Sure.
And maybe this caller knows a bit about psychology, because they decide to psychoanalyze the guy in the picture.
I would rather they didn't.
He is holding that bag like he is holding every bit of the shame and guilt that he's ever had in his life.
Exactly. His body language is, he feels like a total piece of crap, and how did he get talked into this?
Exactly.
Yeah. He's so ashamed.
I mean, is that defamatory?
It's not good. I don't know if it's defamation to say he looks ashamed.
I, Your Honor, I was not ashamed at the time, and this has harshly earned my ruined my future earnings.
I think
many prospective employers have said that I looked ashamed, and so they have not hired me.
I think the larger picture of what they're doing with this guy is definitely not appropriate.
Yeah.
But that is at least just sort of a judgment call. Like, I think he looks ashamed.
What kind of a dick is this guy?
Everyone's a dick on this show.
But this is just wild.
Yeah.
He's carrying shame?
Yeah.
Okay, man.
So another thing that comes up with calls is a new piece of the narrative.
Right.
So now we've decided that the Marines were going to be blamed. That's a new development here on this episode.
No longer are we dealing with the white redneck. Not blaming them anymore.
Well, apparently this caller still is. He looks ashamed.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, look, dude, the bottom line is that all of this can work if you just think that there's 100 different patsies there.
Yeah. There you go. They've got all the options.
Right.
Yeah, it's a buffet of people they could blame.
They meant to blame the Marines, but the white patsy was there in case they wanted to go with the redneck angle.
Right.
The Muslims were there, who may or may not have actually been Muslims, for that same purpose in case they wanted. It's crazy.
It's the old country Patriots Day buffet of patsies.
Basically,
that's what we can do.
Yes. But so now we're prioritizing the idea that they wanted to blame the Marines. And the idea that the city is under lockdown, they're on the shelter-in-place order, there's a new wrinkle that's going to start developing.
All right, okay.
These guys, they're on pictures everywhere. So for them to come out and say, you know, maybe a Navy SEAL did it, they're saying that just in case pictures get credibility and somebody somewhere in a position to make a difference actually speaks out and says, look at all these Navy SEALs everywhere. You know, I mean, that's another way for, you know, mainstream media to cover their butt.
No, I agree. And they're probably telling them right now, you keep your mouth shut or you're going to go to jail for this.
Yeah.
So this is the beginning of a kernel that's going to grow a little bit as this show goes along. And that is, what's going on with these patsies right now?
Yeah.
Who aren't patsies?
They're just hanging out.
Right.
I do appreciate that a certain kind of stupid person can have a conversation that I would have high sober.
Mm-hmm.
That's
you don't know that. The caller might be high.
That's fair.
So the whole state is under martial law now, according to Alex, which it's not. This is dumb.
The whole state has been turned into a martial law zone. They've spilled into Connecticut. This is just unprecedented. Who knows what even the truth is. There have been so many patsies.
There haven't been so many patsies.
So many patsies.
It's all imaginary.
I just love the spirit that they apply to this, of just just escalating it from we've got a few pictures to, God, I can't even believe how many patsies are out there.
I'm overwhelmed with how many people I and the internet have decided to blame for this.
Which makes you think if there are that many patsies, we shouldn't have a bunch of vigilantes going around shooting people.
That's exactly the point I made about all this stuff. Like, it would turn so fucking dangerous.
So many. Oh, man, this patsy over here, let's shoot him. I'm not a patsy. That's just what patsies would say.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck.
So Alex had Stuart Rhodes on earlier to talk vigilante justice, I guess. And now, no show would be complete without another gun weirdo. And so he has Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America.
Of course,
on.
Of course.
And I would say that Larry does not comport himself quite up to the standards of a decent person.
Okay.
What is your breakdown on the spectacle of martial law over much of the state you're in right now, looking for one guy?
It's pretty extraordinary. And as you were saying, when you let in, surprise, it was a Muslim or two Muslims. That's what Muslims do.
Boo.
What?
Boo, Larry.
What
Boo.
The fuck?
Good.
You guys
Good
can't,
stuff, Larry.
You guys can't do it all.
It's that's great. That's real great.
We assumed that it was going to be a right-wing lunatic that they were going to plant the false flag on so they could steal our guns. But what do we get? A Muslim.
Because they just
do
that.
Because they do it. What the fuck are you talking
right.
about?
So in 2019, on our Friday episode, we had Alex's lawyer, Robert Barnes, come on the show and say that we're at war with Islam. And, you know, that's awful, and it sucks to hear. It sucks that people act that way.
Yeah.
You go back to 2013, you hear, like, these are the same ideas that have been underlying a lot of the guests and the people in Alex's orbit for a very long time.
I mean, they go all the way back to the fucking 90s.
Totally, yeah. Totally. But Larry Pratt is coming on here, and, like, he's not saying we should have a war with Islam, but he is saying that Muslims just blow stuff up.
I mean, we shouldn't have a war with them, but as an entire people, they just blow stuff up all the time.
And
it's not our fault.
It's sort of implied that if you don't have a war with
them,
they're
just
going to
blow you up.
Let them, blow stuff up.
Can't have that.
It's a very fucked up position. And so, Larry, you have disearned the ability to have any more of your clips played on this episode. Be gone.
You're banished.
You're on timeout.
You're on timeout. Okay, fair.
And the rest of it's just boring, and he talks about how great guns are.
We're not sending him directly into exile. We're going to keep him in. Okay.
So Alex wants to build up more of this idea that the Marines and the Navy SEALs were the people who are going to be set up.
Right.
And one of the ways he's going to do that is to say, you know what? I was looking at those pictures, and they look surprised.
The body language of the SEALs to me is they were just told to be there for a drill and didn't know. And because, I mean, I've looked at now, there's a ton of these photos and videos. They look, you know, and I see some other guys that look, you know, like older special ops, like back, look totally freaked out. You know, like, whoa, what just happened minutes after the blast? My issue is it started clicking last night. I've seen them four times since Tuesday say maybe it's a former military, like a Navy SEAL, when they have these creepy FBI and Southern Poverty Law Center type guys on. And so are they looking at framing the SEALs, or what is that?
What is that? So you can see this narrative is building. It's shifting. Everything is changing. And this is where it really comes together. Alex gets a call from a guy who thinks that the shelter-in-place request
right.
is very weird. It's very weird.
Yeah, I would say it's unusual.
Yeah, certainly. And we need an explanation for why it's actually happening.
Oh, there's a bomber on the loose.
No. That's what they want you to think.
Oh, I didn't realize that they wanted me to think something.
No. You're a fool. You're a damn fool.
I'm sorry.
You are a globalist titty baby.
You're right. I apologize. You know what? I stepped in it on this one. That one's on me.
You did.
Yeah.
Here's what's actually going on.
The city of Boston effectively is shut down. All the transit, everything. Something is in play.
And they're telling media, the police are saying, we'll kill you if you show what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, they could be hunting down special ops people that have blown the whistle. Who knows?
So this is...
What whistle to whom? Where? What?
This is thrown out as a suggestion.
They could be hunting down whistleblowers.
Totally.
Who have yet to blow a whistle anywhere.
Well, these patsies that were in the pictures. The Marines, the SEALs.
No, you're right.
They need to lock down the city so they can mop up loose ends.
Right.
So they're going around teams, going around and killing all these people that could blow the whistle.
Professional vigilantes.
Now, when I heard that, I thought, that's crazy, first of all.
Yeah.
And then second of all right, well, he's just suggesting that. We'll see how it goes for the rest of the show.
That can't come back. That cannot be a thing that
spoiler
comes
alert,
back.
It does.
So we've got some weird movie montage of them hunting down random people. Oh my God.
So it's introduced though in the context of being a who knows what's going on while talking to a caller. But as we go through this episode, you'll see it become more like, I like that idea. That makes sense. And Alex starts building it into his coverage. But he has this caller who's introduced this idea also wants to give a shout out to Dan Bedondi. And Alex reveals something that I think, it doesn't look good for him now.
Okay.
Do you know what we privately say about Bedondi when we send him on a mission?
What?
Release the Kraken.
That is not that funny. In fact, that is not funny at all.
No. So, release the Kraken is, of course, a reference to the movie Clash of the Titans. It's a common catchphrase that people use, and the way they use it is always in the context of sending in an offensive. It's a weapon release. What Alex is revealing here with his joke is twofold. The first thing is actually pretty important because it may seem obvious to the point where you ignore it. And, that is the case that Alex sends Dan Bedondi to cover the things he covers. In his deposition about his Sandy Hook case, Alex has tried hard as he can to distance himself in any official way from Bedondi's antics. But this clip really seems to suggest that Bedondi is an instrument of InfoWars. They have a target and they send him out to do what he does.
Right.
The second thing this reveals is that Alex sees Bedondi sending Bedondi somewhere. It's tantamount to releasing a destructive weapon. Bedondi is not a reporter going out to ask questions. He's a mythical beast who's completely uncontrollable that Alex is letting loose on people, namely the citizens of Boston and Sandy Hook. And Alex relishes that. He's not fake laughing there. That's actual giddiness he has to tell this caller about calling Bedondi the Kraken. He loves that he can throw a grenade at these people and watch it explode from a safe distance. This illustrates a cruel and sadistic streak in Alex, but it also kind of shows that Alex really doesn't give a shit about Dan Bedondi. He's a thing to Alex, a beast to release on people, but not somebody who he really values that much outside of his destructive capacity. I really hate Dan Bedondi, and I hope he's really ashamed of himself for what he's done, but you kind of can't help but feel a little bit bad for him here, as much as Alex is clearly using him. I don't feel that bad, though.
Yeah, you know, I think I've lost it all. You know, I used to have that feeling of like, Alex, come on, you're choosing your friends. Like, Steve Pachenik is lying to you. These people are being mean to you when they're not enabling you. They're taking advantage of you. All of this is awful. And then Alex is doing the same thing to so many other people. I'm just like, that's their nature. You know, it's like these people just do that.
Maybe not nature, but it's the game they're playing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's a choice to be engaged in this. It's not like some kind of ingrained thing. It's a behavior that they've learned and choose to engage in as a part of their business model.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it is tough to, it's tough to feel that bad. But at the same time, you know, you got to still stay in touch with your human instincts. And someone being used is not good.
Right. It sucks.
So anyway, I still don't feel what I choose to do in a case like this is instinctually, I feel a little bit of pity for Dan Bedondi.
Mm.
But because he's clearly willingly acting in such an awful way towards vulnerable, grieving people, I choose to transmute that pity into disgust towards Alex.
I like it.
That's the way I'm like.
I appreciate
that. I still hate Badandi. I don't need to feel bad for him.
No.
But Alex is the one who's behaving this way
and
towards
him. And
he's
the one who deserves even worse hatred. Sure. Yes, I agree.
Direct it that way.
Perfect.
So anyway, release the Kraken.
Yeah.
Real lame. So Alex gets a call from a guy in Boston, and Alex wants to know if he thinks it's a false flag.
As a Bostonian, what's your gut on this? False flag or not?
My gut instinct is probably not, to be honest with you.
No, that's why we don't screen your calls. We want to hear what you have to say. This could be the one in a million where it hadn't been staged. But then why were there feds crawling all around right before the bomb went off? And why are they lying about it?
So, you know, he's like, hey, you know, you can say whatever you want, but I'm going to be like, why?
Yeah,
that's not
answer everything. Right. Answer every question I have. And if there's one answer you don't have an answer for that's a fine, then you're obviously part of the
you
plan.
Can, you can say it's a false flag if you want, but I'm going to badger you.
Your disinformation campaign.
I don't know. I'm not sure if it goes that far, but he is going to badger people who disagree, sure. Which is not fun. So in this next clip, Alex is talking about the idea that there is, like, the city on lockdown. Mm-hmm. And he makes a crucial mistake in how he discusses it.
I see families driving through, and they're pointing guns at him all over the city. It's not like they think he's in one block and they're doing that. That I can see. Just the whole into other cities?
That is an interesting ripple.
So here's another weird line.
Mm-hmm.
And that line turns out to be exactly one block long.
It turns out that Alex is not philosophically opposed to the police acting the way they have in Boston. His main complaint seems to be a question of scale.
Everything in moderation, Dan.
And Jordan, that's a huge problem.
Ah.
He really needs to be against it regardless of the size for his argument to make any sense.
Uh-huh.
See, because that clip naturally raises the question of what size area is too large for the police to enact what Alex calls martial law. Alex says here that he thinks it's okay on one block, presumably because the police would have narrowed down their search to that one block. But what if they've narrowed it down to a two-block radius that they have good reason to suspect that the suspect is in? What's the substantive difference between one and two blocks that Alex would use to justify one being okay and the other not?
I will give you a very clear idea of what number of blocks. The suburbs?
Mm.
And we're not going to worry too much about the inner city blocks if you wink, wink, if you know what I'm inner city blocks.
Well, now you actually introduce another issue is how big is a block?
Yeah.
Because in different parts of a city, blocks will be different lengths.
Mm-hmm.
It's very arbitrary, the definition that you're making of, like, this being okay.
Are we including minors or with just majors? Like, what type of block are we dealing with there?
And then, Jordan, what if there are two criminals on the loose and they've split up? Can you then broaden the area that's on lockdown? If one suspect being traced justifies one block being locked down and the police telling people in that block to stay indoors and, you know, walking around with guns, then two suspects justifies an additional lockdown, right?
At least two only blocks. One more block.
Sure, maybe.
That's the
scale. But even so, that's a problem.
That's the scale. It has to be one terrorist per block.
Okay, but that's still a problem.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah. And now, what if this suspect is someone who set off bombs at a marathon, then killed police? And what if you're not sure if they're working with other people, possibly even a network? Surely that qualifies them to be considered a target that justifies using the most extreme measures allowable to catch them. My point here is that Alex has made a form of martial law okay, and from that point, he's completely lost any kind of ground he can stand on. If he were against the police acting this way under any circumstances, there's not a whole lot I could do to argue against him. I could disagree with him and say that I believe that there are occasions where the public should possibly do things that are uncomfortable to themselves personally to help the greater public interest, but I couldn't say, like, hey, you are fucked up. You're out of luck. Like, you've made a mistake.
Yeah.
But since Alex says locking down one block because you think a suspect is there, he's completely failed. Now he needs to answer so many questions he absolutely can't answer. Like, why one block is okay but a greater area isn't? What's the difference?
Yeah.
That's a pretty big fuck up on his part. Like, listening to him, I often find things he says that are lies, things that are stupid, but it's rare to find such an unforced error like that. No one's asking him to, like, you know, make his message less extreme or, like, to moderate. Yeah. No one is saying, hey, Alex, be reasonable about this. What if it's a block? For whatever reason, he's just decided to moderate this anti-police lockdown stance. He's just made his job way harder. He's accidentally supported martial law.
Yeah, it's almost like he is trying by accident to be reasonable about this, being like,
no, I think that's his intention.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, for no reason he goes off brand.
Right.
The whole point is be as unreasonable and as stonewalling it and as absolutist as possible. If you interject one moment of reasonability into this, then it's magical.
And it's a thing that he says a couple times.
Yeah.
Like the idea of one block is okay.
I
just don't think he understands his own positions. I don't think he understands what he believes or what he should be saying if he believed the things he believes.
Right.
I think it's just a glaring indication that he's making this shit up as he goes along, and it's all based on feelings and whatever he just thinks in the moment.
Yeah. It'd be very much like actually getting down to who he cares about living or dying at that point of just like sooner or later he's going to say, look, I care. Nobody, you know, everybody has a heart, man. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of thing. And it's like, well, there you go. You are arbitrarily creating these rules and you don't believe any of this nonsense.
I think that the arbitrary aspect is very clear. I mean, you can't, I would welcome him to make the argument why one block is okay and let's say six blocks isn't.
Yeah.
I would be fine with
an interesting conversation.
He's welcome to make that argument.
Yeah.
But I do not see him making that argument, and he needs to, if one is okay and the other isn't, because otherwise it is arbitrary.
Right. Well, and the basic idea behind that argument is I would be more comfortable understanding that these people have a target, that it's not just a wide sweep, and that they are narrowing it down in a very specific way. And by having it only be a block, I feel far safer.
That doesn't work. That's your feelings.
Exactly.
That argument doesn't matter.
Exactly. You got it.
So anyway, Alex maybe crowdsourced this. But he found that clip from Aaron Burnett from the night before.
He found it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see how that goes.
Okay.
I know that walking back and forth in front of TVs the last 3 days, I've heard them say it's probably a military veteran. It could be a military person. It could be military training, foreign military that's bombed us.
Foreign
and then
military.
I remember hearing that last night right before I went on the air, but they actually found the transcript. And what they said is this type of thing that a soldier, now that doesn't mean it's a U.S. soldier, that means it's someone who probably has experience. It could be a U.S. adversary. So on that particular show, I was talking about that's not what they said, but I know I've seen them.
Whoops.
Why would he do that?
I don't know. That's very weird.
That's so weird.
Yeah, because what it demonstrates is that transcript that he just read is what he heard. And what he experienced was them blaming Navy SEALs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is a really good insight into how he processes information.
Right.
That's really bad.
I mean, what's even weirder is that he said it.
Yeah. I bet one of his employees insisted.
Really?
I would assume so. Maybe someone who's new.
Because he does not do that now.
No. I think one of the problems is he was too specific. Because he said Aaron Burnett the night before, and it would be too easy to trace down that it doesn't say what
he
said.
You're right. That's fair.
He's so vague with a lot of his specific references.
Yeah, he could have just said some CNN anchor, and instead he
said
Aaron
And then if someone
Burnett.
Sends him that transcript, he can be like, that's not the one
that's
I was talking
who,
about.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was too specific. So
weird.
I think that might be why. Who knows? Anyway, he goes back to calls. And he gets a call from a guy who says that he has information about this alleged white patsy that Alex has been making a big deal about.
Oh, that's not good.
You'll see how it goes.
Oh, boy.
Jason in Wisconsin is Army and says they have intel on blue shirt suspect everybody's talking about. Go ahead, Jason.
Huh. I expected to get cut off or my house drone strike before I even get on the air. Look at this. Okay, you don't want your kids to die, right? I got kids, too. I don't want them to die. I'm speaking out and decloaking on Facebook. You want to know about the guy with the hat or the hair? The old guy with the hair, the blue shirt, carrying the duff backpack with two hands. Does look a little heavy on this big, giant shoulder. Okay.
This is Joe Frank.
Bleicher, Bleicher, on Facebook, Sean. Knights Malta go hide behind Red Cross. That's why Bush was laughing. Give me your money.
Well, listen, brother, do me this. Send us an email at showtips@infowars.com with specifically what you're talking about and where on Facebook. We'll look it up. Thank you so much.
Alex knows well enough to be like, uh-oh, don't let this guy talk more. He is rambling.
Knights of Malta, huh?
Hiding behind a Red Cross. George Bush laughed.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
That was some sort of surrealist art.
No, that's what you expect from Alex's callers.
Right.
That's about right. And Alex needs to protect the business from that. You know, like he needs to make sure that appearance is minimized. lest other listeners think like, huh, this show might really appeal to people who have some processing problems.
Crazy ass shit.
Yeah. So another caller calls in and is just parroting Alex's line back to him on the show.
But the thing is, you and your staff put a cog in the wheel. When you came up with those photos and you presented them online, it made them delay the news briefs. It delayed the conferences, and they had to change their story because of you and your news staff.
It took them a day to do it. Well, I don't want all the credit. It's too dangerous. Actually, other people did that.
Just you. There's plenty.
I am getting a lot of death. By the way, I am getting a lot of death threats right now. But go ahead.
There's no evidence for any of this outside of just things Alex has said.
I was going to say.
This is all just Alex's imagination being reflected back at him by a caller.
Yeah,
this is
crazy. You're only saying that he stopped the bombing or the false flagging.
Because Alex said it.
Because Alex told you that he said it.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Nope.
That's why would you say that back to somebody?
Here's what you got to get. It is enough on InfoWars.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's enough here.
I mean, it's just enough.
This story is fun. All right, I believe it.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, this caller also wants to compliment Dan Bedondi. And this is something that the other caller said, too, that he has a sack of steel. I think it's a meme that's going around that Dan Bedondi's got a sack of steel.
And I got to tell you, Mr. Bedondi has got a sack of steel. Without a doubt.
Well, you know what? He had him kind of intimidating him and threatening him and stuff all three times before and after. And but still they were afraid to, I guess, arrest him because they didn't want him to be the newscast. But when he got InfoWars.com out and all over the world, they were carrying that news feed live. Normally we get about 1 million visitors a day to InfoWars, 500,000 to Prison Planet, big days, maybe 2 million max. Guess how many visitors we had per minute for several hours after that happened?
All of it is about the PR. All of it is about the publicity from the stunt that he did. He sent Dan Bedondi out there to cause a scene. Yell InfoWars.com, got a ton of traffic. Same thing he ends up doing in the 2016 election with the Bill Clinton's a rapist contest.
Yeah.
This is his MO. This is what he does. And when there's serious issues going on that other people are trying to deal with, he's trying to get attention. So, cool. Good stuff. So Alex takes another caller, and here's where it goes from the suggestion that the lockdown is about cleaning up patsies to it being seriously suggested.
I did not know that.
Now, it's all a martial law deal on Patriot's Day to teach us to be good slaves. And they even have said, later today, on the menu, as part of your vacation, we will have a controlled demolition of an explosive, so be ready for that. And we'll kill any media we see following us, because we're busy exterminating our patsies right now.
100%. You know, Alex,
yes,
I did get up at 4:10 this morning. It didn't take you very long to get right up to speed, and you were literally right up to speed. This is a sanitation exercise right now. We are going after the patsies. They obviously don't want these people to talk.
So now that is the line. The whole situation in Boston that's going on is just so no one is out on the streets whenever they clean up the patsies. And there's a big problem with that. The first is, that if you, well, not one. It's based on nothing.
Yeah.
Second, there are no patsies.
Right.
Third, if you go and look at pictures of Boston from the 19th, it's weird because streets are fairly empty.
Right.
But if you go and look at those pictures, almost everyone has a few people in them.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see a few people because the shelter-in-place request was a request.
Yeah.
It wasn't enforced. It wasn't like you have to stay in your homes. If you wanted to go out and about and enjoy, I don't know, Longfellow Park and just take the risk so you could see an empty park, you could.
It was
multiple
weird
Dunkin' Donuts places were still open. Because Dunkin' Donuts is a goddamn institution in New England.
It was weird to see the Google Street View car out on the road, though. That was a real weird night
trying to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Track a lot of miles with no cars on the road. But there were people out and about. It's not like it's not like it was strictly enforced, stay in your homes or we'll shoot you. That's nonsense. And that cop threatening the reporter, I do believe, is still what we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
The warning that there's an active shooting going on. Now, this controlled explosion thing that Alex is talking about has to do with the police finding what they believe to be another device in a home that they were searching, where the Tsarnaev brothers had stayed. Also, the media wasn't threatened and told not to follow them or anything like that. There's actually tons of pictures you can find of the police at that home.
Yeah.
Like, there's a place called Hutton Photography. If you just Google the Boston Marathon week, they have tons of pictures of the police at that home.
Yeah.
So there was no crack. This is a zero.
Right.
Anyway, I mostly just played that clip to illustrate how now it seems like Alex has fully embraced they're just trying to clean up Patsy's narrative, which I need to point out. And I know I sound like a broken record. That's based on literally nothing but his imagination. Everything in this coverage is stuff Alex is imagining.
Yeah.
It's none of it is real. None of it is real.
Really, that caller and Alex both being like, this is a fucking cleanser or extermination or whatever thing. It's just like, I can't really comprehend that much gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is just, it's not real, man. Nope. And you guys are talking about it with this excited, like, we cracked the code energy about you. And it's like, I don't get it.
I can actually explain a little bit of that later in this episode, but I don't fully understand it either. But I understand a little bit of the feelings that the people are having that Alex is instilling in them. I think that there's a function to that. We'll get to that in a minute. But before we do, Alex has another guest. This is a big day for him. He should be covering this martial law crackdown, the shelter-in-place order. He should be talking really at all about the shootout from the night before.
Right, that was a big one.
It was, in a residential neighborhood.
Yep.
He should be talking about the fact that an MIT police officer was murdered the night before. Any of this stuff could be discussed. Instead, he has an interview with Art Acevedo,
the MIT police, that's a perfect, like, there's another Patsy that they're cleaning up.
Could be.
You could toss it all in there. Good. Instead, nope. We're going to talk to Art Acevedo.
He has an interview with the chief of police of Austin.
Right.
And here's how that begins.
Art Acevedo, the Austin police chief, now in service to the Sith Lord Obama and Michael Moore, as well as Bloomberg. No, he's here. He's a really nice guy, even though he wants to confiscate my firearms.
I do not.
You were saying during the break, okay, you don't want to take my guns. Tell me about it.
Okay, that's why I need to come to see you. I do not believe in gun confiscations of law-abiding Americans of sound minds. Every time you say that, I challenge you on Twitter to show me where I've ever said we should confiscate guns.
And
you ignored me. You didn't answer that because you will not find a soundbite. You will not find an article. You won't find anywhere.
I'll be honest. I didn't see the tweet.
Well, it's on your Twitter. I tweeted you right now.
Well, I mean, I can't keep track of all this.
I follow you, Jones, and that's me.
You plan to put me in a FEMA camp.
I never.
So this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous and so jocular that, like, it really makes it seem like all of the things he's talking about are jokes. That, like, FEMA, you're going to put me in a FEMA camp, you're going to take my guns, and Art Acevedo being like, look, dude, what are you talking about? It's so deflating to Alex's positions.
Art, God damn you.
He comes off very well.
You care so much and you believe in truth and reality, and you should have known that the answer Alex was really going to give you from the beginning is, it doesn't matter, Art.
Yeah.
Art, it doesn't matter if you say yes or no. I'm going to say
I'm going to do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
So Alex got mixed up with Art because he started trying to get him to fight or something.
Sure.
He's trying to get him to, like, we want to confront. Like, this is Alex's tactic. Like,
get into the muck with me, and then I'll pretend that, yeah.
Right, and then we can have a pretend coming together, and like he did with the sneaky snake with Joe Rogan. Yeah. He does this all the time. So he did that with Art.
No, seriously. Look, I joked around because I know you fled communism in Cuba and said you ought to move back to Cuba.
Absolutely.
Because you're at, and I'm in it tongue in cheek, but you're at an, I had to, like, smoke you out to come down here and confront me. I know you're not a chicken. You want to come down here and confront me.
No, I just want to get the record straight.
Even though you're like a karate champion here, I hear, I better not challenge you to a boxing match like I did Piers Morgan.
You already did.
That's very good.
I understand.
I appreciate that. That's far funnier than release the Kraken.
I understand that Alex has this, like, sort of confrontational strategy where he tries to get people to be lured into his net by, like, hey, why don't you come? But I also think, like, if you understand that Art and his family did flee Cuba to the United States, like, telling him to go back to Cuba, there is a connotation to that.
Oh, I can't think of
anything. That is much deeper than like, hey, you love communism so much, or even just like, it is a go back to where you belong.
Oh,
go
no,
back to
no. Your country. What are you trying to say? That part of the motivation behind that is believing that because you're non-white, you don't belong here? Come on, Dan.
I don't think
it's just about communism.
I don't think it's 100% that, but there's tinges of it that make me uncomfortable.
Of course.
The way that he's bullying people is questionable, I would say. So Alex asks about the Boston bombing and the police response to it. I think Art has a pretty good answer.
The bottom line is what's going on in Boston is they're looking for one more suspect, as far as I know, from the media reports. And they've asked the people in the entire city of Boston to stay indoors.
Would you ever do that in Austin for like one guy?
I don't want to be critical because I don't know what we think is for one guy. We don't have all the information. I'm sure they have good reason. It would take a lot for us to tell the entire city of almost a million people here in the city of Austin to everybody stay in.
And Boston's even bigger.
No, we're actually bigger.
Alex doesn't know relative city size.
Sure.
I think that's a pretty good answer. You know, we don't know really what the situation is. It appears to be a hunt for one person, and it did end up being that, but you can't be too careful.
Or did it?
You can't be too careful. So this interview is
the sadness on your face.
This interview is completely pointless.
Yeah.
It's mostly Alex trying to bring up his gun talking points and Art being like, I think the background checks are a very reasonable thing for citizens to submit to. It's not a huge deal. There will not be any confiscation. I would never go along with that. I've not heard anybody suggest that seriously in any way. It's just pointless. And along the way, Alex keeps asking him to go shooting with him. And Art is like, yeah, absolutely. I'll go shooting with you. Alex pulls out his giant 50 caliber Barrett.
See, now that's no good. No, you can't just pull out a gun. He's a cop.
It's fine.
I think it's actually against the law.
It's fine. It's not loaded. So anyway, he just keeps trying to get him to commit to going to shooting with him, which he does. Art does over and over again. Says, yes, I'll go. And then Alex keeps teasing him that he's going to get in trouble for going shooting with him.
Well, let me ask you this. When are we going to go shoot the 50 cals?
Let me know. And any time.
I know that the Justice Department may not like that.
You know what? I'm not worried about
it. I'm being sarcastic. PR lady does not seem excited about it.
It's just nonsense.
God damn it.
Alex is kind of giddy that he's there because I think that he hoped that he could make a lot out of it. And instead, Art's just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, that's
so now you have to switch into weird bullying and needling in order to try and make him angry enough to actually give you what you want. And Art is just like exhausted by your bullshit because you're a goddamn child.
I don't know if he's exhausted by it, but he understands what Alex is doing. Like he's clearly at least aware of like he's going to try. He's full of shit.
No, it is so much.
He does say over and over again, I like you.
Yeah, they're in the back of a fucking car, and Alex is putting his hand 2 inches away from his face going, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you.
Somewhat. But not that extremely, perhaps. But anyway, the interview is pointless. It's not worth really getting into, except for the fact that it happened, which is weird. So Alex now is back. Art is gone, and Alex is just hitting this killing the patsies narrative.
They've got Boston locked down to hunt down and get rid of the patsies. That's what I believe is the most probable scenario unfolding from the pathological behavior I've seen from these people before. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're spot on.
Of course. Fine. Yeah. According to Occam's imaginary razor, that is exactly what must have happened.
Yeah, so we see this narrative completely shifting over the course of this day here on the 19th. It's now all about blaming the Marines or the Navy SEALs, the military men, and the entire lockdown is to sweep up loose ends and kill these patsies. So that's interesting. It's just developed over the course of the show as opposed to talking about anything real. And I think the reason is because Alex knows the stakes are too high.
Yeah. This is a fucking petri dish.
Yeah. So we're now into the fourth hour of the show. And what's interesting about this, we're in overdrive. And Alex is still taking calls. And here's what one of his callers says.
The reason I'm calling is I was up all night listening to the police scanner and watching the news and seeing how things were unfolding over at MIT. There was a police officer shot.
As far as I know, this is the first mention of that. In the fourth hour of the show, a caller brings up the cop that was killed. Okay. If Alex referenced it in passing and I missed it, maybe that's possible. But from my listening to this, that was the first time I heard this brought up.
Sure.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So instead of really dealing with any of this shit, Alex goes on to – he's really excited to interview Dan Bedondi because why not? So he has Bedondi call in. It's all just stupid about how it's scary out there in Boston.
Sure.
But this is really what the interview is about.
Yeah, great job, folks. Pray for Dan Bedondi, I tell you. I've done stuff like he's doing now, but I've never done anything that big myself. I mean, I've crashed some big press conferences and exposed Janet Reno for murder at Waco, and I've confronted presidents and been arrested, and I've been, you know, I mean, I've done some, but nothing where it's a press conference that's, you know, on every TV in North America and most of the ones in Europe. I mean, listen, 100,000 visitors a minute for hours. To Infowars.com. 100,000 visitors a minute.
All roads lead back to publicity.
Oh.
All roads lead back to his bottom line. That's like what Alex is saying is not that Dan Bedondi has done something that is actually in any way substantively important. What he's done is pull off a bigger stunt than any I've been able to do in my career. Yeah. That's the subtext of this.
This is like when a show tweets out, oh, we got 2 million, we made it to 2 million downloads. Thanks, everybody. We couldn't have done this without your help. But instead of that second part, they said, we made it to 2 million downloads because we lied about 9/11. Hey, everybody, thanks to all of you. Fucking Christ.
Yep. So instead of dealing with the real issues going on in the city of Boston and surrounding this bombing, Alex decides to spend a good amount of this fourth hour complaining about Bill O'Reilly talking about
it. That makes sense.
So Bill O'Reilly talked about how Alex played this video from The Family Guy.
Sure.
And how it was edited out of context.
Right. Bill was like, oh, I wish we'd done that first.
No, Bill is not like this.
Uh-huh.
Bill is against what Alex is doing.
Right, because he wishes we had done that first.
Nope. I don't believe that's the case.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Maybe, but probably not. But Alex is furious. He's not furious. This is just more attention for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bill O'Reilly came out and attacked Alex Jones for Family Guy and Dan Bedondi for asking a question. And they only cover us when they can say we're lying. Yep. And all we did was Watson did a blurb about a clip. He went and checked the original Family Guy, you know, thing. It was two clips from the same episode showing how he runs over people at the Boston Marathon. And they say, how'd you do it? How'd you win? And he shows him detonating two bombs. He then goes on to blow up the Golden Gate Bridge, too. Yep.
Quahog.
And it's called a Turban Cowboy, a Tea Partier that joins Al Qaeda. That's the whole thing.
Nope.
And they came out on the CNN, Fox there and said, we're just liars that it never happened. I mean, that's how dumb they think you are. And of course, that was just a minor blurb we put out. So they chose to focus on that.
It was not a minor blurb. That was a large part of his coverage.
Oh, yeah.
That was a large part of the 16th, 17th. 18th. It's a very big piece of Alex's obsession. He brings it up even in the Coast to Coast appearance.
I've heard it many, many times and not just once from a small blurb. So
no.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. So anyway, he plays the clip of Bill O'Reilly. And I hate to say this, but Bill is right.
Here is the Bill O'Reilly clip.
In back of the book segment tonight, did you see that? We begin with a March 17th episode of The Family Guy. I'm Bob Costas, here with Boston Marathon winner Peter Griffin. Peter, how did you do it? Damn phone's busted. Maybe I dialed wrong. Now, that didn't actually happen on television. That was doctored by some online pinheads. They distorted that clip from The Family Guy, which is now pulling everything off the net. Here to explain further, Juliet Huddy.
You know the way people are. People are crazy. That was so just, I mean, it's so ironic that that aired March 17th.
Now, how could somebody
do that? Two separate storylines in one show.
Here, hit pause and back it up.
These are sick people out there.
No. Hit pause and back it up 10 seconds. So first they say it didn't happen. Then she says it aired March 19th. They show him running over people to get to the front of the Boston Marathon and winning with piles of dead bodies and blood everywhere. And then they go, how do you do it? And he detonates a bomb, blowing stuff up. And then he also blows up other stuff. So our point is, It's about terror attacks with cars and bombs. And then they sit there and say we're a liar.
Bill did not say that this episode didn't happen and it didn't air. He's saying that people didn't see that clip on TV because it's edited, because it's doctored. Alex is not engaging with criticism. The part of this that people take issue with is taking the part of the bombs and attaching it to the part about the marathon is a distortion of what this episode was. When Alex says he blows up the marathon, then blows up other stuff, that's not true. The blowing up was other stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I hate to say it, but Bill O'Reilly is, you know, he's on the right side of this one.
Well, his guest doesn't know the difference between irony and coincidence. So
you're nitpicking.
What can I say?
A bigger issue is that Bill keeps being like, how do they do this? Like, how do they edit video? He seems confused.
I've worked in television for 20 years.
That
How
troubled
could somebody
me.
Do this?
We know that he loves to do it live.
He does.
Fuck it. I don't
fucking idiot.
Don't understand why it's confusing that people can take video and splice it together, but whatever. Anyway, Alex is really furious about this, and he ends up later threatening Bill O'Reilly. But before he does, he gets to this point, which I think is central to a lot of his ideas. He's trying to explain why there is this massive conspiracy going on.
The globalists have committed incredible amounts of crimes, and they know they're going to end up going to jail if they don't fully take over.
That is a clip that could literally come from any month of any year of Alex's show. It's a constant refrain that he uses to convince his audience to accept outlandish conclusions like this bombing was a big setup by the government. One of the reasons that line he's selling is, about this being a giant conspiracy, why it's hard to accept for people is because of the why. Most of Alex's conspiracies are presented as being really simple, but on a closer analysis, they would involve a staggering amount of participants. So the question does seem to ask itself, why would these people all agree to something like this? Whenever Alex needs to justify something and he's running out of options, his default is to say that the globalists know that they've committed tons of crimes, and whatever conspiracy he's selling that day is their only shot of keeping themselves out of prison. We've seen it over and over and over. In the present day, this is his explanation for why the deep state is trying to get Trump impeached. If they don't, they're all going to prison, which is how he explains how wide-ranging this conspiracy would have to be. This narrative crutch also serves a second purpose, which is to make every single conspiracy that Alex is selling his audience a matter of immediate life or death. If the globalists need to pull this off in order to make sure they don't go to prison for their many crimes, then it stands to reason that if Alex and his intrepid team could just bring the truth out on this one, they might just bring down the globalists once and for all. Every half-cooked theory, every fantasy about a picture he finds on 4chan, they're all elevated to nearly absurd importance when they're framed like this. And what's so crazy is that it's so consistent in his career. Like, I really thought some of this stuff that you, because we hear this a lot recent days, I kind of thought that was a part of his increasing desperation in the post-2016 era. But here it is in rosier times in 2013. He's just constantly fucking with his audience, trying to make them think, like, this is our shot every single time. And they fall for it.
Yeah, it does appear like his imaginary world is, unaffected by reality, but it absorbs it. You know, like, no matter what's going on in the real world, like, there could literally be a coup going on in the real world, but it wouldn't affect his imaginary version of what that coup would be.
It would inform it.
Exactly.
His alternative bubble reality adjusts based on some information from reality.
Yeah. But the main thrust of the imaginary universe will always stay consistent.
Well, Alex wouldn't say that they needed to clean up Patsy's if there wasn't a shelter-in-place request going on. He's incorporated in by now adding in they need to go clean people up.
But the bad guys would always be willing to go clean people up events
I feel like
warrant
that,
it.
Absolutely. That's implied.
See? No matter what happened.
Yeah, it's a trick. And that's what I was referencing earlier when you said, like, why are these people feel so intensely in on this? And part of the reason is because Alex is selling it in such a way that they're led to believe that, like, if we can just pull this off,
we might finally be rid of those globalists.
It's game over.
Yeah.
So anyway, like I said, Alex challenges Bill O'Reilly to a fight.
I mean, you are a piece of work. You know, I dare you, O'Reilly, to have me in studio with you, because I've seen you get like this with your other other guests and stuff. In fact, I challenge you, Bill O'Reilly, to a boxing match. Heard your dad used to beat the hell out of you pretty good, so I bet you're a tough guy.
Jesus Christ. That's fucked up.
That one's pretty funny.
That's not
I'm going to give him that one. That
I don't like Bill
funny.
O'Reilly, but the idea the idea of mocking someone for like being the survivor of childhood violence or abuse is...
Yeah, no, it's
Jesus
incredibly
Christ.
Fucked up.
That's low.
Especially on the same episode where somebody who he did offer to fight was on earlier.
True, he just does this.
Yeah, he was like, I'm not actually going to fight you. Yeah. Like, that's bananas.
That's a part of one of the other like more subtle things I was trying to demonstrate, that is Alex has patterns.
Yeah.
He needs attention from somebody who he believes will be able to help him.
I want to fight. Exactly. I'm going to throw a tantrum, and that way you'll pay attention.
So Alex, as we get towards the end of this episode, he's going to hand it off to Jakari and David Knight to do a couple more hours.
Sure.
So we can keep that traffic coming in.
Yeah, of course.
But he starts to realize that he's playing a dangerous game. His life is in danger.
Yeah, he is the most dangerous game.
He wants everyone to know that if he dies, keep the fire.
Okay. And if they do set me up or kill me or anything, I want you all to continue InfoWars. I want my operation to continue. I want to be able to just have them defeated. Go out, confront them at press conferences, confront them everywhere. Take over the InfoWar. Never back down. Look, they're not going to stop us. The only reason they haven't killed me, believe me, they love to. They kill people all the time, is they know it'd probably turbocharge everything. We like in Road Warrior when they turn the nitrous oxide on, you know, the vehicle goes into, you know, doubles its speed in mere seconds. So, whatever. Hell, I'm so damn exhausted sometimes they come after me and I don't even worry about it. I'll be like, oh, really? You're about to get me out of my work? I'll never commit suicide, though. I love life.
Yikes. That's a weird end to that clip.
Is that the end of the show?
It's supposed to be. That's supposed to be when he hands off the baton.
Right.
He does come back after that break.
You don't want to end your show with, sometimes I want to kill myself. No, I'll never kill myself.
Sometimes I want to kill myself. It's sometimes I would welcome death.
Yeah.
Because he's not doing it.
If the
globalists kill me, sometimes I'm like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm never going to kill myself. I love life.
Love life.
Do.
Let's all give it up for National Mental Health Week, everybody.
So that's how he's supposed to end the episode. Because he's already said after this commercial break, Jakari and David will be here. But he doesn't. He comes back from that break and he makes some interesting comments.
And if this is proven to not be a false flag, which I think it's gone from 1% chance to maybe 5% chance, I will eat my hat and apologize and be very pleased. I mean, I would do cartwheels and probably go on vacation for a week and run around, you know, popping champagne bottles. Because I really want to believe that the government is not this evil.
Start doing them cartwheels,
All
Alex.
All right, so I assume that on our next episode, he is going to apologize.
We'll see.
And he's going to go on vacation, right?
We'll see.
All right, I'm excited.
I guess he didn't say that, his arguments about it being a false flag are disproven, then he'll eat his hat. He is saying you have to prove it's not a false flag.
Ooh.
So I guess he would never accept whatever evidence is presented to him.
Because whatever evidence you have is only evidence that it is more a false flag.
You just move the goalposts.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's the last clip. And he's sort of responding to a little bit of insecurity that he didn't cover the shooting from the night before.
Yeah.
And this is how he articulates it.
I woke up at 3 a.m. and went to the computer. After I took care of a sick child, at about 4 a.m., I get on the computer, headache from hell, and I see people on YouTube going, why isn't Alex covering the shootout? Well, I went to bed at 9. The shootout started at 10:30. I got to sleep, folks. I don't have a 24-hour crew. We're trying to hire more journalist writers to work overnight and have a night shift. I need money to do that.
That makes sense.
Why didn't you talk about it earlier today?
That's my question.
That's a good question.
That's my question. It's like, yes, absolutely. You do deserve to sleep. There is no reason why you needed to cover that at 3 in the morning or earlier than that. It doesn't explain why it's almost not addressed at all on this episode.
My explanation is that I can only talk about what is happening in this very instant. It is impossible for me to talk about the past or the future. I have a very serious disease.
And Bill O'Reilly needs an ass kick.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what the fuck is going on. I know that I suggested at the beginning of this episode that it feels like he knows that it's too hot. And if he behaves in his normal ways, he's being dangerous.
He's going to get a lot of people killed.
I think that there is a feeling that that is possible.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that that's the case. Maybe he just didn't want to cover it.
I mean, it really does seem like he could also have just kind of gotten bored and his attention span isn't very good.
I don't know.
So he's just like, I don't feel it. It's no fun doing the old, they're setting up white guys for Second Amendment shit. Now they're killing hundreds of patsies.
Maybe hundreds. We don't know an exact number.
This is a great new fucking development in this ongoing story.
I am somebody who listens to loads of this bullshit. And I'll say that this episode felt very different than the 18th.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is a shift in it. And I mean, the only real difference between what happened on the 18th and what happened on the 19th is up until the end of Alex's show on the 18th, the FBI hadn't released the suspect photos and the situation was abstract. There wasn't concrete information. Yeah. And on the 19th, there is an official story. And it's an unfolding situation where there's real serious actions being taken.
Yeah,
that's the only difference that I see in between the two. And Alex's behavior is completely different.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he's still lying and making up narratives, but he's more looking back to his narratives that he's already established and then pivoting some into it being about the SEALs and they're cleaning up people. It's just different. I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it, but it's fucking different.
It's like you know, you write a play with a specific actor in mind, mm-hmm. and they do the run for a good year, and then the play keeps going, but the actor wants to move. It's not going to be the same play. You're putting different characters, or you're putting a different actor into a play written for this specific guy.
You're
taking this, they're coming for our guns play, and you're throwing in Navy SEALs, and it's just not the same thing.
Or it's like reading a Poirot novel a second time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
the
first time through, there's ambiguity.
Ooh, who does it? Yeah,
once you already know what the end is,
yeah,
it's kind of like, I'll begin.
You're like, oh, shit, so everybody killed him on the Orient Express? What a cop-out. Fuck
Spoiler
you.
Spoiler alert. So I don't know. I'm interested to see how this develops, but I will say I'm slightly less interested than I was about a lot of the other Boston bombing episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
This feels much more like normal Alex.
Yeah.
I think the fever has broken in much the same way as it has for the city of Boston. Now, on the 19th, in the evening, they end up finding Johar.
Yeah.
And there's the shootout with the boat, and they end up taking him in. And I mean, I know that Alex will probably just return to his kind of more normal conspiracy bullshit behavior. But this was an intense blip. This was a real, real fucked up couple of days. This stretch of, I mean, I guess it's, what, a five-day span? 4 or 5-day span?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From the 15th to the 19th?
Yeah.
Has been a wild ride on Alex's show. He's been so irresponsible. He's done about as bad a job as he could while insisting he should have a parade and everyone should be so thrilled that he has broken the case wide open.
No one has ever failed as hard while thinking they deserve more.
It's literally flabbergasting.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that this doesn't get talked about more in terms of Alex Jones.
It is an awe that I feel right now, that you can feel, that you can do that stuff. Because you would think any human being would have at least some knowledge.
Yeah.
For him to gaslight this level is awe-inspiring.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the stuff that he's doing with these pictures and all this stuff is, well, it's behavior that a lot of the internet was engaged in.
Yeah.
But you expect that from the internet.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Alex Jones is at least pretending to be a news person.
Right.
It's the behavior.
Every time
is,
you remind me of that, I'm always confused.
The behavior is way less becoming from someone in his alleged position.
Yeah.
But I'm shocked that more people don't talk about this stretch of time. Like, it's so bad. It's like you can really see the intention of crafting a narrative that serves his purposes.
100,000 views per minute.
But then you see the payoff.
Yep.
You see the intention, the behavior, and then the goal achieved. And then almost a disinterest. Not a disinterest. I don't know if it's a disinterest. I'm not sure exactly how to phrase it. But he's gotten what he needs out of it.
Yeah.
Now he can return to his normal behavior of spinning conspiracy yarns and coming up with bullshit.
Do you know what it is? He's post-coitus, Dan.
Yeah, the intensity is gone.
Yeah. The little death.
Yeah.
That's what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
So anyway, we'll be back with another episode on Wednesday. But until then...
We have a website, Dan.
Yep. And we also are on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. The website is knowledgefight.com. We're on Twitter at knowledge_fight and at GoToBedJordan.
That is correct. We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. And if you would like to listen to the show, go to iTunes, subscribe, download, review, go to other podcast apps, review it there. Do all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am the juiciest ice cube.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.